And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear here. You're on Declare Your Independence to me, Ernest Hancock. No fear here. You know, that's another one. I do that. No fear here. You know, it's not like we didn't have enough to be afeared about in news over the weekend. We'll go over that. But good news. We're going to talk about some good news. This weekend, we were gone. You know, some of you may have seen a reduction in new stories. We had pretty good coverage up in the middle of the freaking northern Arizona, south of Flagstaff, out in the woods, on the cliff overlooking into Sedona and the Red Rock, Oak Creek Canyon of Cole. But we were busy, you know, because it was touted for months as our second child. We have two boys, two girls, girl, two boys, and a girl. And he just turned 29, or he will, like, tomorrow, I think. And so it was a weekend camping thing for friends and family. So it's like 60, 70, whatever, bunch of people, okay? So we go up there. Yeah, it's a forest thing. You know, he wants to have a party in the woods. We're going birthday and party. And we get there, and it says, welcome to Forrest and Veronica's wedding weekend. So my son, they didn't tell anybody, but, you know, a couple of people helping. And I think her father and mother knew they were helping doing some stuff, a couple of friends. Her three children, she has a boy and two girls, 14, you know, I don't know, 12, 11, something like that. You know, fifth grade, seventh grade, and freshman high school. Known these kids for years. They're part of the family. And now it's official. I got, after we have our seventh kid, you know, next month from my other son, after him and his wife having their fourth child, then that means, boom! We're 10. I'm double-digit grandpa now. You know, I'm like, oh, I got that stripe. Well, these kids are awesome. We love them. We go to all their football, soccer games and stuff. Known them for years, and they're just co Christmas co. But now it's official. Now the family. You know, now as they're starting to go through puberty and high school and all that, they're a big influence on the other grandkids. So I'm saying, hey, man, you guys got to, you know, help me raise these other, because anything you guys do, because you're so awesome, they're going to do. So this, and they didn't know either. It was all a surprise to everybody. They had been planning on this. They got engaged. Not they've been dating and living with each other for years, you know, and they're family already. But, you know, for whatever reason, it's time to get married. And they just didn't want to make a big, giant, humongous deal out. But it was a beautiful destination out in the forest, married in the trees. They brought in all the white chairs and tables and all that kind of stuff, and they're toy haulers, you know, so they weren't, it's hunting season, so they went up there just to make sure they got the place that they wanted. They went up a week early and put up their three of their trailers, Justin and one of the, her brother that goes to NAU, you know, kind of come down 20-mile drive, you know, just go check on it every now and then, make sure everything was there. Hunters usually leave their hunters' stuff alone because they got, like, guns and stuff. But it's archery season. It's archery season. So they know the area, found a beautiful place, and it was just awesome. And all of our children and grandkids, only one of the babies, you know, my youngest daughter didn't bring her baby because she didn't want a baby, you know, there to have fun. But the, so other than that, everybody was there. And he's only a year old, so, you know, he stayed with family. But, you know, they were good about putting up a lot of the guys' tents. You just send us up there with your tents, and we'll have it all ready for you, and you get there late Friday night. By the time Don and I were going to bed, and it's all, you know, we're like, oh, the festivities of Friday night. We're sleeping, and the party just got started about 11 midnight. All the other guys arrived from their friends and work and everything. Fire that speaker up, boy! And I'm going, yeah, this is why I camp further away. But they were having fun, so it ain't no thing. But it was cold that night. But the other nights, it wasn't that cold. We have a little tent heater propane thing, you know, that you go through a couple of tanks a night of that, but you're toasted. So what we're going to go ahead and do is we had Richard Stallman scheduled, but he had to beg off until when did he say he was going to come back? Next week sometime. What's going on is I get the impression from the Free Software Foundation or whatever it is that they're with, he's in Italy. He's traveling Europe, I guess, talking to countries. Going, look, man, Uncle Sam's bad. So we're going to find out. He's going to tell us everything. But he had a meeting with some government or something, you know, and he couldn't make it that he had planned today. He wants to, so it'll be on next week, which will be more interesting because then he'll have met with some other governments and get their intake, their input on what's going on with this trusted program module chipset of NSA turn on FCC said you have to sell to do, and kind of we're all surveilled now. And this chipset has been making it through all the new devices and everything under the guise of, oh, it's better than we get to, and we're shutting it down. You can't change the firmware in it, and it's like malware going straight to NSA installed on your computer, and you don't get to change or control or alter any of the program that's inside it. And more I'm studying on this, I'm going, wow, because we knew, you know. And we knew from back in the mid-90s when the internet first started, it was called Project Epsilon and Carnivore. Epsilon was a member of Parliament in the United Kingdom just on the floor blurted out, hey, you know, what about, and you're an American bad, and you're doing, because what was happening is Airbus, when they started creating the company, the airplane manufacturing, and to compete with, to compete with Boeing and the U.S. manufacturers and so on, they pooled their resources and had one big air company. And as they started to do this, the business of America is business, and what they were doing is using the surveillance technology to spy on the bidding for large contracts for anything, you know, fighter jets, big airplane, commercial this, you know, widgets for whatever, who cares. But the thing was, is that in the United States of America, they were surveilling everything more than just Merkel's, you know, phone number, you know, and this has been going on for decades. So what happened is they were able to get the low bids on stuff. You know, they were able to see the communications between people. They were able to glean, you know, advantages to U.S. companies. And they were, not liking it. So that's how Anyway, so it came out. You look it up on Wiki and you'll see the history of it. Then there was another one called Carnivore. If you ever saw the movie Swordfish with Hugh Jackman and John Travolta and Halle Berry, I mean, it was a really good movie. You know, and that was one of the things how he, as a hacker, you know, Hugh Jackman character went to jail because he exposed Carnivore, the FBI, as an effort to scan all email and anything you say. Ooh, you said Durka Durka Jihad, and you're a person of interest of, I don't know what the heck they're thinking when they see me. I mean, all the stuff I search and the pictures I get for things, they're going, man, this guy, I don't know, but he's on the list, you know? So this, we understood from back then the attempt with the Clipper chip. The evolution of that has moved into the point to where you kind of know that they're doing it, they want to do it, well, this is how they're doing it, and it's going to get worse. So in the third hour, we have Blake Anderson. He's a big computer nerd guy as a Bitcoin guy, too, and worked for the banks. And now he's, like, not. So I asked him if he knew anything about this when he was at MIT. He's like, you know, I think he does. So we're going to have a conversation with him later. More news when we come
back.
This
is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrow. The dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Okay, what kind of news can we, you know, yak about since we don't have Richard Stallman coming out? I was going to do 2 hours of Richard Stallman. We can talk about my son's wedding. Or we can go to the news, damn it. You know, we'll do, you know what? Let's talk more about my son's wedding. It was really nice. You get to go up in the forest and camp. We were all looking forward to it, and it went really well. And you pull up, and there's a sign. You know, it's this old wood kind of, you know, Western thing with the white, you know, hand-painted, you know, brush deal. Welcome to the wedding weekend. So it was awesome. All the kids are jumping up and down, having fun, and they, you know, and it was great. People pay billions and gazillions of dollars to have a destination wedding like this where you can go and you see the red rocks of Sedona kind of thing. You know, I'm going, really? And, you know, the Milky Way. I mean, the stars were, you know, and it didn't rain. Usually it's raining this time of year, but up there. But so it was just really an enjoyable time, relaxing. And Don and I, you know, stayed an extra day just to, you know, kind of help and just chill a little bit. And we came back last night. Got to go unpack everything. I'm telling you, that trailer, I mean, my sons and I built the trailer years ago. And it was, they wanted motorcycles. They had to have a trailer to pull it. So what it would cost to get one, I said, you know, we can buy a welder and some stuff, what it costs of material and stuff and labor, and then we get the equipment after we did it, and we can keep doing it. I mean, you know, or have it for other things. So then they're always borrowing the welder. But, you know, the it was an enjoyable experience, and it was really done well. I'd used a suspension that my father did for his Alcan Traveler. I knew, you know, the type that he had and where he got them and everything. I customized, ordered it, and built it to that axle. But man, it was, you know, an ATV and everybody's camping equipment, or all the crap that we had and stuff we hauled for everybody on that. It was, you know, I think I'm at my limit, okay? But it did great and we're good. Except coming back, the alternator went out in the truck, so I had to stop and get a new battery. You know, it's getting old anyway, so we made it back home. Ta-da! We made it back. Now I got an alternator I got to change up. So everything, you know, perfect, smooth, you know, everything. But it was really awesome. You know, everybody had a really good time. My other son, he had a shirt and vest and boots and all this kind of, it was kind of a Western thing. They had it all picked out for him. Over the months, they got sizes and everything. And, you know, Veronica did a great job. Had it all, the package all for him. Here's what you're wearing. And everybody got the girls their dresses, you know, that were bridesmaids and everything. They didn't know and went there, had people to do their hair and makeup and everything. It was awesome. You know, so he's had a, really, you want me to wear that vest and these boots and, you know, and he goes, fine. So he went the whole day Saturday in the boots. Now, these are guys that they work with. He's one of the Uber supervisors out there and so on, but he was best man. He didn't get a best man you know, a bridesmaid shirt or something, you know, like the girls did and so on, or a bride shirt. You go, hey, I'm going to get best man shirt. All right, fine. Boots, underwear, vest, hat. That was it all day. I'm the best man. I want to show it for you. You know, so it was fun. Everybody had a good time, and, you know, there was plenty of alcohol consumed, but nobody got stupid or anything. So it was very, 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 very pleasant. And adding their family to ours is just awesome. You know, they're all great people, and we all get along for years. And it's just, you know, the holidays just keep getting better, you know. Damn. So that's all good. Now, let's go ahead. And one thing I did want to make sure we tapped on, we've been covering it for so long, is that Tesla is finally launching their new Model X. And at an event on the 29th, which is in just, less than a week or so, they're going to be doing the launch of the vehicle that I think is really going to send them off into making a bunch of money. And this has been, excuse me. This has been a hotly, you know, I always wondered, you know, I'm sitting there going, what the heck? I don't understand. I am so sick that alternators, like the alternator, you know, I've got an alternator, you got carburetor, fuel injection of the P, whatever valve of, you know, the hose of the short of the battery kind of did something. I got to fix the something, you know, the hot water, the water pump goes out, the radiator gets a leak. I mean, all that stuff goes away with electric cars. Amen, brother. I'm out of protest of all the busted knuckles of all the crap that I have. I mean, you'll have new problems. It'll be, it's a battery, the wire or motor, maybe the brakes and steering, you know, or something. I mean, this is going to get streamlined. Anybody that's worked on, you know, shade tree mechanic over the years out of, you know, pleasure, desperation, poverty, whatever, you had to work on your own car and change everything. I'm like, hell no. I had enough of exhaust systems, intake manifolds of the freaking timing of the whatever the heck, you know. It's going to go electric and yay team. Well, what they did is it's expected that Tesla will lay out pricing and options for the X at that time. It's in the September. Early deposit holders have already been invited by the company to spec out their vehicles on a private site, but that's been for the limited edition, fully loaded signature model. Beyond those early builds, there will be some variability in how much or how little buyers will need to spend. Now, what he wanted to do, it's $100,000 or whatever it is, you know, $80,000 to $120,000, you know, for the Model S. But the whole goal was to have a four-door SUV crossover kind of something that will be the family car. And this is going to be, now, a lot of people don't know that four-door model sedan, the Model S, seats 7. People don't know that. You got all kinds of room. You don't have an engine, you know. So the front is the storage, you know, the trunk kind of thing, and under the hood, I believe. And then in the back, when you open up, there's two more little seats. You have two people up front, three people in the back, and behind them, there's these two little jump seats for little kids. You know, 7 people go in that Model S. A lot of people don't know that. And to compete with that, Mercedes has, they don't, okay? So now the Model X, what they're going to do with that is it has these gull-like doors, the rear ones, which makes it easier to get in and out of, and you're not banging stuff and so on. Why they don't do this more, I don't know. You know, and the forward ones, I think they should do like the scissor type they do on like Lamborghinis or something. They kind of just rolls forward out of the way. And I, you know, and again, I'm like, and why don't they do that? I don't know. So, the Model X, they wanted to get it down under $35,000. You get the features and the distance, the range, and the cost. See, they're getting, like, when you equate the cost of the electricity with gasoline, these things get 80 to 100 miles to the gallon. And when you buy a Tesla, you get free charging. You know, the superchargers they have all over, it's free. You buy the car, you get free charging. You want to go from L.A. to New York, you can do that. And you go, and it's free. So I'm going, you know, that goes into the price of the car. You get it down to $35,000, you have a crossover like this. It's like, damn, you know what I'm doing? I'm waiting 4 or 5 years and getting a used one. LA might be worth the same. You don't know. I'm just like, damn. It's like buying a gun, man. They don't really lose their value, you know. So, the Model X finally coming around to make a difference.
This is your Roberts & Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Monday, gold is down $7 at $1,133 per ounce. Silver is 6 cents higher at $15.30 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $227. Roberts & Roberts is your trusted source for physical precious metals for nearly 40 years. Give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
LRN.fm is proud to announce our official listening apps for Android and iOS devices. Now you can easily tune into our streams anywhere, anytime on your smartphone or tablet. Just visit apps.lrn.fm or search for LRN.fm in the Android or Apple app stores. Please download, rate it 5 stars, then share the link on social media, and let your friends and family know how you're listening to LRN.fm. Download it now, free, at apps.lrn.fm. That's apps.lrn.fm.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Okay, to make sense of the next story I want to talk about, first we need to introduce you to Paul Craig Roberts. Now, we have a lot of, whenever he has a new article up, he's probably, maybe twice a week he'll have something up, and we'll make sure you guys see it on Freedom's Phoenix. But you need to know who he was. It's more my generation, and when I was even younger guy, came out of Georgia Institute of Technology, where he holds a PhD, and holds a PhD from University of Virginia. There's postgraduate at University of California, Berkeley, and blah, 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 blah. But what's of interest is 75 to 78, okay? This is during the Cold War building up of they're really starting to see how much money they can spend. He served on the congressional staff as an economic counsel to Congressman Jack Kemp. Now, Congressman Jack Kemp, he used to play football. I remember that. He was some football quarterback star or something. And Republican nominee candidate at one time, as I remember. Now, he was well known. There was Paul Craig Roberts had helped draft the Kemp-Roth bill, which became the Economic Recovery Tax Act of 1981. This is, they hit the ground running with Reagan. We're going to, make taxes easier and make it, IRS love you more and all that kind of stuff. So it was, and they wanted to cut waste, and it's waste. We're going to trim waste and the waste in every program. Wasn't there a big giant meat axe to freaking 600, 800, some stupid federal programs that there are? Seriously, just, whack out the whole bunch. But it was a beginning. And Paul Craig Roberts played a leading role in developing the bipartisan support for supply-side economic policy, which was kind of what was advocated by Reagan. So because of, he had an influential article back in 78, on the tax burdens and for Harper Magazine. And while he was economic counsel to Senator Orrin Hatch, gagged me with a forklift, the Wall Street Journal, Robert Bartley, offered him an editorial slot. So he wrote for the Wall Street Journal until 80. He was a senior fellow in political economy at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, which is at Georgetown University at the time. And then he went on to be Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy under Reagan. Now, President Reagan and Treasury Secretary Donald Regan credited him with a major role in the Economic Recovery Act of 81, awarded him, blah, blah, blah. Now, what he does now is that he was born in 39, so I guess that now he's 70-something. He's an American economist and blogger. He served for 1 year as an assistant secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy in the Reagan administration. He is a former editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Business Week, and Scripps Howard News Service. During the 21st century, Roberts has frequently published in Counterpunch. Now, that's a progressive online magazine kind of thing, writing extensively about the effects of the Bush and later Obama administrations related to the war on terror, which he says has destroyed the U.S. Constitution's protections of American civil liberties, such as habeas corpus and due process. He has taken positions different from former Republican allies, opposing the war on drugs and the war on terror, criticizing Israel's policies and actions against the Palestinians. So, you know, for a Reagan United States Assistant Secretary of the Treasury and economic policy to be against wars and, you know, in Israel and for, like, Palestinians not, you know, being bulldozed, this puts him on the other side of just about everything. But he, having been during the buildup, you know, during the military industrialization of, you know, due to the Russian and here come the Russians, oh my God, you know, at that time, you know, to be in the middle of that, know how it, the sausage is being made, and then come out and say, you know, the things that he does, you know, has some impact. So this is just, you know, the things that we, you know, you just want to make sure everybody knows. And he wrote in the article, it's, put it up, all Republican presidential candidates stand for war. Now, I'm sure, you know, he's including Rand Paul because he says some going to get some, you know, whatever. So he may not be as much war, but it's still, you know, give me the right conditions and we'll nuke somebody. So it's just, I mean, you don't support your base or people you, the Levolution, as father headed, the voluntarist movement, the libertarians. You don't get them jump on board when you make kind of hedgy statements. Well, it's kind of sort of almost a little bit of I'd arm the Kurds and arm this guy and arm that and not these guys and we go and we're involved. So it's just like, no. But, you know, he's a freaking peace dove, as Dr. Frank Tamburi was saying, to the warmongers. If you're not, you know, willing, able, and eager to start every freaking war you can, well, then you're not good enough for them. So you just piss off everybody. You know, and it's just going to be a neon flashing long-term example of that. And so we'll see what happens. But Walker has dropped. That kind of surprised a lot of people. Frank made the prediction this last week. He goes, Keith Cernick, a friend of ours, he said, you know, the last five standing will be Jeb Bush, Carly Fiorina, and Rubio, Cruz, and Trump. Then Frank said it'd be Trump, Fiorina, Bush, Rubio, and Walker. Well, he missed the Walker one. Okay, so Walker's dropped off. So he's got, you know, you were wrong. You were wrong. You know, I don't even have an opinion. But so we'll talk about that Thursday. Now, he was talking about Carla Fiorina at the debate, describing the way she will lead us to Armageddon. She won't talk to Putin, but she will send him the message via military threats. Having met Vladimir Putin, this is quoting Carla Fiorina, I wouldn't talk to him at all. We've talked way too much to him. What I would do immediately, after she talks to Bibi Netanyahu, because they're buddies, is begin rebuilding the Sixth Fleet. I would begin rebuilding the missile defense program in Poland. I would conduct regular aggressive military exercises in the Baltic states. I'd probably send a few thousand more troops into Germany. Vladimir Putin would get the message. Russia is a bad actor, but Vladimir Putin is someone we should not talk to, because the only way he will stop is to sense strength and resolve on the other side, and we have all of that within our control. We could rebuild the Sixth Fleet. I will. We haven't. We could rebuild the missile defense program. We haven't. I will. Okay. And the more you find out about who Carly is, all of a sudden, you're going, are you freaking kidding me? Okay, well, then Paul Craig goes on to say, there is not a peaceful person among the Republican candidates. Even the female is heartless. Carly Fiorina positioned herself alongside the macho men as a warmonger. She let the military security complex know that she, too, was for sale. Send in the campaign donations, and she will see that the money flows back to the military security complex and the buildup of fleets and armaments that will send the Russians a message. Alas. The only message U.S. politicians want to send to the Russians is a war message. The Pentagon has upgraded the newly orchestrated Russian threat to potentially aggressive and is updating its plans for war with Russia. What has Russia done to cause Washington to plan war with Russia? Don't you know? Russia invaded Ukraine, just like Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and Al-Qaeda connections. If Russia invaded Ukraine, how come Ukraine is still there? If weak, insignificant Ukraine fought off a Russian invasion, then how is it possible that Russia is a threat? To deal with the Russian threat, Washington has sent armed German jet fighters to patrol the skies over the Baltic oligarchies. Washington tells Russia that the fighters are not directed at Russia. So why the fighters? Perhaps they are there to protect the Baltics from Iran, like that anti-ballistic missile system Washington placed in Poland to protect Europe from non-existent Iranian nuclear ICBMs. It is reckless for Washington to take provocative actions against Russia and to tell Russia that the actions are directed elsewhere. Russia knows full well that the actions are directed against Russia. What Washington is teaching Russia is that Washington can never be believed, as everything Washington says is a lie. Russia cannot risk making an agreement with Washington to end the orchestrated conflict because Washington's word is meaningless. A liar simply cannot be trusted. Now, this is Paul Craig Roberts. You know, in the Reagan administration, economic doing, he's going, man, it's damn. Carly Fiorina, we'll talk to you a little bit more about her.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied, I don't need.
Oh, I gotta tell you this. I saw McCain-Lieberman. We need a McCain-Lieberman ticket. You know, it's McCain, the Republican, Lieberman, Democrat, and they McCain-Lieberman. And if you get McCain-Lieberman, then you get support for Israel! Israel ticket! You know, it's kind of, I'm like, wow, man. You know, they're going to the bench. You know what I mean? I saw this happen when the Bush administration, you know, baby Bush, when he is getting the nomination, and here we go, and who's he going to be as the guy that's kind of down that? Dick Cheney. When they pulled Dick Cheney, you know, and scraped him off the bottom of the barrel, I'm going, damn. I'm seriously, they're that desperate. You know, they're going to keep the neocons going. And then Cheney's up again, up in the grill of, you know, Washington, saying, you did it wrong. You haven't nuked enough people. I mean, it's scary. Where are these people manufactured? How are they made? Where do they come from? You know, and you scratch the surface in any of these candidates that make it, you know, to debates and so on. You just, you know, sometimes they're there just to, I don't know, make fun of or to do whatever to or something. But, you know, like Dr. Paul, they thought they're going to be done with him right away, and it just didn't work out that way. But Carly Fiorina, let's go ahead and take a look at, you know, a little bit on her, and you'll see my point. Now, she started in, we should go back. You know, you can see that there is a Sloan Fellows program was created at the MIT Sloan School of Management in 1930 by Alfred P. Sloan, chairman of General Motors, from 37 to 56, who envisioned the Sloan Fellowship as a means of developing the ideal manager. The Sloan Fellows Program is the first management leadership education program for executives and mid-career experienced managers. Now, this is, you know, it's a who's who list of here's the boys. It's just like the Rhodes Scholarship. Clinton goes to, you know, where's Rhodes at? Oxford or something? Whatever. They go to United Kingdom and they get learnified on how you rule people. Well, this is another rule thing. You know, that now, who are the people that would do this? Well, you know, Carly Fiorina, you look at her history here. Let's see, early life. Born September 6th in 1954, so that makes her, I don't know, about, what, 60, around there somewhere, in Austin, Texas. The daughter of Madelton Montross Nijergens, whatever that means, and Joseph Tyree Sneed. Okay, so you have a couple there. At the time of her birth, Fiorina's father was a professor at the University of Texas School of Law. Okay, so he's a professor. He's a law professor. All right, well, that's cool. He would later become dean of Duke University School of Law. So now he's a dean at a law school at Duke. Okay. Deputy Attorney General. Whoa. How'd he make the leap over to Deputy Attorney General? And judge on the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. Really? Now, her mother was a, you know, abstract painter, and she is... Mainly, Carly is mainly of English and German ancestry and was raised Episcopalian, and I don't care. And then it goes on, all this other, her education and so on, and you find out about the Sloan thing. Now, she got Master's of Business Administration, MBA in Marketing from Robert H. Smith School of Business, wherever that is, University of Maryland College Park in 80. She obtained a Master's of Science in Management at the MIT Sloan School of Management under the Sloan Fellows Program in 89. So you're looking at, you're going, really? So that's, let's see, 89, she was in, middle of her, their pad. I mean, she'd already worked her way up. You know, she worked as a secretary for Kelly Girl, you know, Kelly Services and such, when she was going to school and everything. She received a bachelor's in philosophy, medieval history at Stanford University in 76. During her summers, she worked as a secretary for Kelly Services. She attended UCLA School of Law in 76, but dropped out after one semester and worked as a receptionist for 6 months at a real estate firm, you know, moving up to a broker position before leaving for Bologna, Italy, where she taught English. So you look at this and you go, you know, what is this? Someone that had the resources, parents wanted her to go to university. She got an education. She got out in the world. She did, you know, probably her character and personality. She worked up in the, all of a sudden, midlife, she decided she's going to get her MBA and such. She gets her degrees. She gets, set up. And then in 89, she's, finishes with the... MIT Sloan School of Management. I'm familiar with this kind of track because there's a thing called the Thunderbirds International School of Management that's within a couple of miles of us right here where we're living. And it is my experience with them in dealing with commerce and it is a school by which you pluck people out to run the world. I mean, this is what's going on. It's like that Rhodes Scholarship kind of thing, you know, the Clintons and such. So I can see this path and I go, wow, okay. So, and she had a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals judge dad. So I'm going, really? Okay. So then we go back and we see, all right, she was a American Republican politician, former business executive, who currently chairs a nonprofit philanthropic organization, Good 360. So when you go and you look at this organization, it's a 501c3 charitable organization in Alexandria, Virginia. And it's been around for a long time. Let's see, when did it start? Founded in 83, okay? So it's been around since, before she knew about it, I'm sure. And it was known as Gifts in Kind. And what it really did is a lot of small and large, medium, I mean, big companies, they have extra stuff, outdated, you know, hardware, all kinds of business, I'm sure, software and computers and furniture and, you know, just stuff. And it's a philanthropic thing. So they take it, you get the write-off on taxes, you know, you donated to whatever that they redistribute to communities for because they need it and they determine how. But, I mean, this gets a lot of donations from thousands of large and small companies. you know, including Fortune 100 technology, retail and customer corporations and such. But they redistribute the stuff to 30,000 community charities across the United States and throughout the world. It's acknowledged as by Forbes magazine as one of the most cost-efficient charities. It operates at a 0.3% of fair market, blah, blah, blah. It gets a lot of notoriety. Then in April of 2012, Carly takes this over. 2012. Now, what's the timeline here of why would she do that? Well, you know, because she needed to pad the resume here. Started in 1980, Fiorina rose through the ranks to become an executive at AT&T and its equipment and technology spinoff, Lucent Technologies. Now, I remember there was a Lucent Technology thing. I used to do some contract stuff for people that work here. I had an auto detailing company for years, Motivity Auto Detailing. And we had Motivity Laundry Service that Donna would do, and we started adding on other services. You know, we wanted to do pool cleaning and landscaping and hair cutting. Well, I mean, we're just going to keep adding on services. And then the government got in the way. I mean, So it sent me off in another direction. But it was, I remember we had a contract with one of the executives at Lucent for we go out there on a regular basis, detail automobiles. But in talking to them, what I learned is that how dependent these companies, all of them, I mean, everything on military industrial contracts. And what Lucent did is they had night vision goggles or something, you know, that they were, that was a big deal. They were making gazillions of dollars on that one. And I could see, part of, here it goes. So you have interesting conversations with people in such positions. As chief executive officer of Hewlett Packard from 99 to 05, she was the first woman to lead a top 20 company as ranked by Fortune magazine. Now, what happened was, from 99 to 2005, a lot of interesting things happened. She came in to, kind of fix Hewlett Packard and oversaw their acquisition of Compaq. That made them the largest personal computer seller, manufacturer on the planet at the time. And probably one of the biggest now, too. But what happened was, during that merger, when they became the biggest, that's right when the NASDAQ took a dump and the computer industry went in a tailspin. And then 2001, 9/11 happened. And then from there, she launched into government. And I'm going to tell you that story when we come back. The reason I want to focus on Carly is to try and make sure she's an outsider. BS. Ma'am, Bravo Sierra, she is big time inside. I already see where this goes. I just want to predict it so I can say I told you so later.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Tuesday, September 22nd, 2015. Silver is trading at $14.95 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,129 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $232. Antiwar.com reports in a move that could dramatically shift the face of the Syrian civil war, Hezbollah has told Lebanon's Daily Star that it is their intention to shift to a purely defensive role in the country and that the town of Zabadani near the Lebanon border will be the last rebel-held target they'll help attack. That could be a big loss for the Assad government, which has relied heavily on the Shiite militias and Hezbollah in particular for major combat operations. Though Hezbollah gave no indication why they had changed their mind, they indicated that Zabadani was the last site needed to protect Lebanon from Islamist infiltration. This may not happen, however, as the Syrian military has agreed to an open-ended ceasefire with al-Qaeda in Zabadani, and Hezbollah probably won't carry out their own offensive against the town during a ceasefire, despite its strategic importance. The transition may reflect domestic pressure on Hezbollah, as many Lebanese factions have accused them of provoking cross-border attacks by al-Qaeda and the Islamic State by participating in the war in Syria and have called on Hezbollah to stop intervening abroad. For over 35 years, Robertson Roberts has been a trusted source for buying and selling your investment-grade precious metals. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and permanently removed the minimum purchase order for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Robertson Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on investing and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 850-478-5270 or online at rrbi.co. UPI reports a former executive of a peanut company responsible for a deadly salmonella outbreak several years ago was sentenced Monday to serve nearly 30 years in federal prison, the harshest punishment ever handed down in a foodborne illness case. Stuart Parnell, the former owner of Peanut Corporation of America, PCA, was convicted last year of knowingly shipping tainted peanut butter and faking the results of lab tests intended to detect salmonella. Two others were prosecuted along with Parnell in the first ever criminal trial of food producers linked to a deadly outbreak. Parnell's brother, Michael, was sentenced to 20 years in federal prison. Former quality control manager Mary Wilkerson received a five-year sentence. Before the 28-year sentence was read on Monday, relatives of the nine people who died during the outbreak in 2008 and 2009 spoke in court to express their losses. Randy Napier, whose 80-year-old mother died after eating peanut butter that originated in a PCA plant in Georgia, said it should be enough to send a message to the other manufacturers that this is not going to be tolerated anymore and they had better inspect their food. Parnell's defense attorney slammed Monday's punishment, saying it amounts to a life sentence for his 61-year-old client. In Survivor Max by Davi Barker, 11-year-old Max must survive the zombie apocalypse alone in New Hampshire. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the lame brains swarm his home searching for living flesh. Max must apply his porcupine Freedom Scouts training to plan his escape, but first he must prove that he's too smart to die. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook and Amazon, or read Chapter 1 free at SurvivorMax.com. Reuters reports Republican Governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin abruptly pulled out of the 2016 presidential race on Monday, doomed by a lightning-quick collapse from serious contender to a candidate struggling to raise money and his profile. Walker, reading a statement in the Wisconsin capital of Madison, decried the negative tone of the Republican campaign in remarks seemingly directed at New York billionaire Donald Trump. He called on some of his rivals for the Republican nomination to join him in exiting the race to give voters a chance to rally around a frontrunner that can win the November 2016 presidential election. Walker's fall was dramatic and swift. He electrified conservatives in Iowa in January by promoting his record in Wisconsin of having beaten back public unions and survived a recall election. When he officially announced his campaign in early July, he was among the leaders for the Republican nomination. But the 47-year-old governor quickly struggled on the campaign trail despite a strong conservative record and a warm personal story as a Harley motorcycle aficionado. In an initial sign of trouble, Walker last week canceled events in California and Michigan to concentrate on Iowa, the key early voting state that shares a border with Wisconsin. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
You're putting your name, address, credit card number, social security number, all that, you're just chucking it right up onto the internet where any disgusting degenerate can grab it? The only way to make sure that your identity is never stolen is to change it every 3 years. That's what I do. 2 years ago, I was Ellen Foxcroft, attorney at law. 3 years before that, I was Trish Homingwood, patient at the Austin State Psychiatric Hospital. And 3 years before that, I was Regina Dupree, lead singer of the soul group Derriere. And you know what? None of my identities has ever been stolen. So to make sure that your personal information stays safe, you gotta follow some simple steps. First, you're gonna need new pieces of identification, right? But don't worry, old Shelby knows a guy up in Detroit can fix these up pronto, real cheap. Next, you're gonna have to fake your own death. But all that takes is a mold of your teeth, a corpse, and a $500 used car for setting on fire.
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, if in the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. All right, well, there's been better. All right. This is the Freedom's Last Chance, Max Hernandez, Thieves Emporium. Okay. Now, this is, we requested that he send us some books so that we could review it, and I got guys that love this kind of stuff. And let me go ahead and read the blurb on the back, and you kind of get the idea. Thieves Emporium, a novel of technology, economics, and death in the age of the surveillance state. What price freedom when government knows all our secrets? So, I mean, you know, and the story is that Fawn, which is the heroine, got to the shelter too late for dinner, so she just wanted a safe place to sleep. But a dark stranger offered her more, a ticket to a new world filled with opportunity and danger. Welcome, Fawn, to the new Badlands, a place beyond the reach of any government, without laws or regulations of any kind, where everyone is free, but no one is safe. This is the story of a young mother's attempt to survive in the new digital underworld. Follow her as she becomes a pioneer, a smuggler, a spy, and a freedom fighter, while dodging forces that threaten to destroy the foundations of the modern nation state. The characters in this novel are fictional. The place is not. It's growing around you, like cracks in the armor of the new surveillance state. Read about it now, while you still can. The Thieves Emporium. I heard some good things. Now, I got three copies. That's all you could spare. One for me, one for you, and one for a friend of mine that I'm going to, make sure I'm very interested in what he has to say about, because his opinion goes a long ways. He reads a lot. So we're going to go ahead and send that to him. I'm going to try and start, getting into it a little bit, and we'll see what's up. Because this kind of, I was told that this novel is kind of, there's been novels throughout the past that have kind of predicted, and you kind of get a good vision of, just read the book. One less thing I got to explain. If you read this, it'll take a lot of that has been Atlas Shrugged in the past, or watch the movie V for Vendetta, or some, or the latest 9/11 video. And so I'm looking forward to that. There's been a lot of books that have had that kind of impact on me. And I'm looking for something like that that's a little bit more modern, because I remember in the mid-90s, it was called Unintended Consequences, and I still get a lot of downloads on that. We got it finally in electronic format. Somebody, I mentioned on the air, and they sent me all the electronic formats of it. And I go, okay. So we put that on. Now, John Ross, the author, I had him on, and I told him, because I knew him from when he wrote it back in 94. And he wanted, safe Second Amendment is for everyone endorsements and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just going, wow, the unintended consequences, some of those editions hardbound are going for $300, $400. And I'm going, a friend of ours bought one to give to another friend of ours and a young man in the group that was very interested about it. And that was a nice gift for him. And I know it was at least $300. So I'm going, damn. And he promised me on the show last year, he's like, hey, we're going into paperback printing of the, and it just never happened. Well, hell, I'll do it. Crap, I'll just rip it off and do it. I'll do the publish of the kind of, here you go. So we'll see what happens. But I tell you, Unintended Consequences is really targeted to BATF. It was a Second Amendment culture kind of thing. But how would society unravel? Well, one of the things is that the society, is not the government, it's the people. But the government sure as heck wants to sway public opinion to support whatever the heck it is that they want to do. And one of the ways that they do that, of course, is presidential campaigns, candidates, and presidents. So that's why the more I just scratch the surface a little bit on this Carly Fiorina. I'm just, wow. So what? They're all bad. You know, but people were going, oh, she's the Trump killer. Or she's the kind of woman that we need. We'll get a woman in there, you know, and you have a black man, Ben Carson, and we'll, you know, you throw that in. The Republicans all of a sudden got, you know, color and gender thing going in against Hillary of the, you know, just weird stuff, you know. And I'm hoping that it's getting to the point that, you know, once you finally had, you know, a black president, you just get over it that, okay, you have, can we just go on merits now? I mean, are we good? Do we have to have a woman, you know, all of a sudden we're, you know, like up with the other countries that have had women leaders, you know, because they're going, oh, we need a next Margaret Thatcher. We need an Iron Lady, man, that somebody get work done, get down to business, which is of America's business. The business of America's business, we need to do some business with aircraft carriers, you know, and she's definitely, how much money can she spend on the military and such? Oh, yeah, I love Israel. So she's just, you know, flipping off all the switches. Where do you get this? Where does this history come from? Well, that's one thing that we're, you know, kind of looking at a little bit more of her history, because it plays into it. And you go, dang, man. All right. A lot of people don't know that after she did Hewlett-Packard from 99 to 05, during that time, there's when they merged with Compaq and became the biggest giant, world's largest personal computer manufacturer. Now, she laid off 30,000 of the U.S. employees during that merger, and she got a lot of heat for that. But then, you know, as ultimately she hired back more than she fired. But it was, you know, probably just cleaning the house and getting rid of, and kind of, you know, first thing you do is anybody that disagrees. But the, they didn't make a whole bunch of money because NASDAQ happened. You know, the stock crash, the dot-com crash, and so on was going on about this time. But right after that, to reinflate the bubble, you know, the interest rates, and they lowered, and then you got the real estate bubble. I mean, it's just more government messing around with the economy. But they were needing some money. 9/11 happened. When 9/11 happened, the story goes is that Michael Hayden, which was, I think he's General Hayden. I think they call him General. Anyway, Michael Hayden was head of the NSA. Later, he would go on to direct the CIA. Now, when 9/11 happened, this is where Bill Binney comes in, the NSA whistleblower guy. Now, NSA whistleblower, well, Bill Binney and a bunch of the other guys, there's about five of them, they did frontline specials on them and so on. And they knew that all the programs that they had to comply with federal law, so you're not a felon, don't go to jail, okay? The law was, is that all the surveillance stuff is not to be turned on the American people. That is not the job description of the whole purpose of the United States government, was to prevent other people from doing this kind of thing and not, you know, privacy and liberties and freedom and all that kind of stuff that Uncle Sam is supposed to be protecting, Constitution and everything. Well, what happened was they took all those surveillance tools and they turned them on the U.S. people. Now, Bill Binney knew this was this is illegal as hell, and he didn't want to go to jail. So, he, you know, eventually they left and made a big deal out of it. Well, during this time, Michael Hayden, which was the head of the NSA at the time, needs a bunch of servers. They know that we're going to need to surveil and accumulate and data and kind of, Stalin's wet dream. You know, the Nazi IBM cards digitized if we get to, because we can now. You know, because keep in mind, you know, computers in 2001... they were, you know, you could do it, but you needed a lot of muscle. I mean, it's not like, you know, and it's going to get even better as time goes on. Memory's going to get cheap. Capacity's going to get, you know, exponentially more powerful, you know, of these computers and so on. But no one, you could do it, but you just had to get a bunch of servers and overwhelm it. So Hayden called Carly at HP and said, hey, you're the big guys now, and so on. Hey, can you hook us up? She stopped an 18-wheeler that had a bunch of servers going to some vendor, turned it around, went to Langley, Virginia. You know, they just said, yeah, what do y'all need? Or wherever it went, Washington or something, here you go. Well, that ingratiated her with Hayden at the NSA. How did the relationship develop from there? I'll tell you.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Hello. Okay, let's go ahead and finish this up with Carly. I just want to make these predictions because I can, you know, and you can. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? If you know where to look and what they kind of tell you, going, oh, she's just one of them and those and that and kind of, then this is how it happened. As the CEO over at Hewlett Packard, when 9/11 happened, General Hayden, Michael Hayden, you know, was at the time NSA guy or something. Then he goes on to be CIA and then, you know, whatever. But he needed servers. Carly, as the head of HP, she calls, you know, where's that truckload of, we got some truckloads of servers somewhere, truckload, and there's that, you know, 80, I'd be a good American, and we're just stopping that, and whatever vendor is going to get it, and screw him, and then turn right around and go give it to the government, and we'll help you install. Now, keep in mind, at the time, you know, they were going, you know, the IT was having some problems. You know, computer industry, all this high tech, and there's the dot-com bubble in the stock market. NASDAQ just took a dump, and all these companies, they lost like half their value a lot of times. And I think HP took a big hit, too. So her job is, you know, get us some business, you know, make some money. Well, when the government comes to call and said, you know, we're going to take care of y'all if you love on us a little bit, well, that's what they did. Now, for some reason, it didn't pan out well enough that the board of directors kept her and they fired her. And then, you know, but then later on, we heard her say in the debate that one of the guys on the board or the guy that directed the firing or became the next director, something, you know, took out a full page ad in the New York Times saying, oh, she was right and she'd be great president and we love her a long time and this is not an issue anymore and we were wrong and you know, she should be president. Okay. Well, when Hayden became CIA, who did he call on? Verena, to head up the intelligence, we rule you through computer people. You know, she's walking the halls of CIA, the intelligence community. To think she's an outsider is that you're not informed. So I'm going, wow, this is, she has a, you know, damn. But there was something else. In 2008, she was advisor to John McCain's 2008 presidential campaign. You know, So who just came out this weekend endorsing her? McCain's daughter, what's her name? Megan, I think. You know, Megan, she's been on, you know, various, you know, Late Show, Tonight Show, this show, that show, and, you know, commentator on whatever, and she's the kinder, gentler Republican, next generation McCain thing. Now, keep in mind, Carly Fiorina knows how this works. Her father was a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals judge after being a law professor and so on. So I'm just going, wow, this is, I mean, it's a small family. You know, they just got more people to pick from. Well, you know, Meghan McCain's going to be running for something someday for something, you know. Well, she's out, you know, Team Fiorina. She's wearing a shirt. Yeah, we like you some Carly. Why? Carly was her father's economic advisor, I think, or at least an advisor. I think it was economics, to John McCain during his 08 campaign. Wow. Well, then what happened after that? I don't know. What'd she do then? Well, that wasn't enough, so she ran for the United States Senate in California in 2010 and won a three-person race for the Republican nomination, but lost a general election to incumbent Democratic Senator Barbara Boxer by a 10-point margin. Now, she, it was like, you know, 42-52, something like that. But the thing was, is that she, I remember this campaign as, you know, she's going to, you know, spend some money. It's going to be a Republican, you know, conservative that's going to, you know, get that Boxer. And I can't remember what her position on guns, because that was a big thing. It was guns. So I'm hoping that she's kind of, yeah, me like you some guns. Well, this is, you know, we went through her education and her early career. But the bottom line is not an outsider. She's an insider. She made it very clear. It's war, freaking more, and get ready for some more. And having some more, and oh yeah, you know, whatever Israel wants. And I'm going, what makes her an outsider? Base that on what? All right. So as this unfolds, I just thought it of interest, and we kind of get a little bit of understanding there. All right, let's see what we got here. Official U.S. government policy forces Marines to look the other way as allied Afghan forces, rape little boys and stuff. Not your job. Did you know that it is official policy that our soldiers are told to look the other way when young boys are being sexually abused by Afghan commanders? If they are allied forces with the U.S. against the Taliban over there, I guess it's okay. All night we can hear them screaming, but we're not allowed to do anything about it. The Marine's father, Gregory Buckley Sr., recalled his son telling him before he was shot to death at the base in 2012. He urged his son to tell his superiors. My son said that his officers told him to look the other way because it's their culture. So this is what we're allied with. We go to war and kind of you mess up people's heads and they go over for the noble cause of this, really? All right. Woe to us. McCain-Lieberman draft effort. There's a video here. Oh, yeah. This is him doing the bomb Iran thing, McCain. So let's see. McCain-Lieberman draft effort. Is there really, something? Let's see. Today, the hashtag McCain-Lieberman draft effort officially debuted. With your help and support, we can unite and fix America. Fix America, McCain-Lieberman. What is that about? It's an Israel thing. I guarantee freaking that. Whatever. All right. Question. Do you think the federal government poses an immediate threat to the rights and freedoms of ordinary citizens or not? 49% of Americans believe U.S. government is a threat to freedom. I'm glad, you get half of America, and they reported it before it hit 50. But, are you surprised it's that high or are you surprised it's that low? Or are you surprised they even asked a question? For starters, a clear majority of the population believes that there is widespread corruption in our government. In 07 and 09, about two-thirds of Americans believed this. But by 2014, about 75% of Americans viewed their government as corrupt. Also interesting to note is the growing fear that our government threatens our freedoms. In 2003, 30% of the Americans polled by Gallup agreed that the federal government was an immediate threat to the rights and freedoms of ordinary citizens, 30%. By 2015, that number had grown to 49% of the population. I don't see it going down. I'm wondering, you can be corrupt and not necessarily a threat to our freedom, I guess. But then you're corrupt and a threat to our freedom and to our pocketbook and to our children's future. After a while, you're going, They're bad. The most common reason cited for this belief are the growing size of government, violation of civil liberties, threats against Second Amendment rights, and intrusions into our private lives. Oh, yeah, Carly and the Second Amendment. I'll have a report for you when we get back. I'll go take a look. We'll have that for you when we come back here. Declare your independence in just a little bit.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Fiorina on the gun issue, it's a kind of traditional Republican. I'm not for any new gun laws. I support the Second Amendment. I was against the assault weapon ban and let's see, what was the other one? Oh, yeah. TSA, no fly list. Just because you're on the list doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to buy guns. Some people are good that are on that list and some. So it's just kind of this, now what about in the case of, you got to get down to nitty gritty of it. So we'll see just how it, I just feel this Republican, Rush Limbaugh bullet point kind of, her time will come. They're already kind of have, been touting her, but it's going to be, the front runner up. And then you'll start hearing, wouldn't it be a good idea if Jeb and Fiorina kind of came together? Wouldn't Jeb Bush and Carly Fiorina be a dream ticket? Well, wouldn't they? Wouldn't they? Well, wouldn't they? Well, wouldn't they? You know, why wouldn't they? So, that's coming. Oh, God, man, after a while, you've been through so many of these, you just, ew. I'm so tired uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. I tell you, that's one thing. Carly's background, as you go through, especially since when she ran for U.S. Senate in 10 against Boxer, I remember vaguely that campaign. I remember there was a boatload of money spent in the primary, I can tell you that. And Hugh Packard would go, ooh, go get me some. Now they're just, screw it, skip to the end, we're going to run for president. United States of America, where'd she come from? Where'd her money come from? How'd she, what? What office is she doing? What's she doing? What? They're just, scraping for something. We're going to find out as time goes on. So, now instead of doing the presidential debate parties, to get a, 1.5, 2 minute, 3 minute clip of Ron Paul kicking her butt, it's entertainment. I mean, you just kind of got to get over the frustration of waiting for Rand to be, hardcore on something and we just march out kind of statement. That's just not going to happen. But all you do is just piss us off and, you're still voting. And then you're never going to be neocon enough, get the establishment to back you. And I don't know what the negotiation is. I never understood that. Which is why so many people that didn't understand it supported his father. So I don't know what's going to happen. We'll see. All right. Public school students are the new inmates in the American police state. Rutherford Institute. This is John Whitehead, writing this. From metal detectors to drug tests, from increased policing to all-scene electronic surveillance, the public schools of the 21st century reflect a society that has become fixated on crime, security, and violence, investigative journalist Annette Fuentes. In the American police state, this is John Whitehead speaking, in the American police state, you're either a prisoner, shackled, controlled, monitored, ordered about, limited in what you can do and say, your life, not your own, or a prison bureaucrat, police officer, judge, jailer, spy, profiteer, etc. Indeed, at a time when we are all viewed as suspects, there are so many ways in which a person can be branded a criminal for violating any number of laws, regulations, or policies. Even if you haven't knowingly violated any laws, there is still a myriad of ways in which you can run afoul of the police state and end up on the wrong side of a jail cell. Unfortunately, when you're a child in the American police state, life is that much worse. Microcosms of the police state. America's public schools contain almost every aspect of the militarized, intolerant, senseless, overcriminalized, legalistic, surveillance-riddled, totalitarian landscape that plagues those of us on the outside. From the moment a child enters one of the nation's 98,000 public schools to the moment she graduates, she will be exposed to a steady diet of draconian zero-tolerance policies that criminalize childish behavior. Overreaching anti-bullying statutes that criminalize speech, school resource officers, police, tasked with disciplining and or arresting so-called disorderly students, standardized testing that emphasizes rote answers over critical thinking, politically correct mindsets that teach young people to censor themselves and those around them, and extensive biometric and surveillance systems that, coupled with the rest, acclimate young people to a world in which they have no freedom of thought, speech, or movement. And this makes it into pop culture. Now, I'll give you an example. We were, I think it was last Wednesday, we were watching a debate, and somebody mentioned, I'm missing the season opener of South Park. And I go, wow, season opener of South Park? Okay. So I go on Hulu, later, day or two later, and I go, oh, there it is. And Cartman, it's all about the school being politically correct. The principal is fired, and they bring in PC principal. I'm the PC principal. Are you politically correct? And he's all, weightlift buffed up and everything, and he's the meme that they were trying to portray is that, white, buff, defenders of all that is PC, kind of, you know, Jack LaLanne, you know, bodybuilding Arnold Schwarzenegger and guys all over the place at everywhere you go, at the bar, at the gym, at the school, at the, you know, any interface of government, they're PC. And they're making sure everybody else gets PC, and they got a PC fraternity if everybody gets to be PC. And it's just, in a half-hour cartoon, did exactly what they're talking about here in this article. It's just, you know, look, John Whitehead of Rutherford Institute is making, you know, the school is a breeding ground for statists. It's just, it's a training ground for this. You know, vote or die! You know, I mean, it's got, this is, all this stuff is, you start to see the rebellion in pop culture. The rebellion in libertarian, freedom-oriented, liberty, leave-me-aloneist, volunteer, whatever, anarchist people are out there in the media. They're influential, you know, positions of, they got a microphone, you know, bigger than mine, that they're able to make these kinds of social commentary. And they get targeted. Well, some people want, like getting targeted. Go ahead and target me all you want, you know, because I don't know any better or something, you know, and they make their money in other ways. Matter of fact, rebelling against the system is how they become successful. Trey Parker, Matt Stone, that do South Park. And, at, you know, first year, freaking 9 Tonys or some Tony Award for their, the Mormons or whatever it is that, now, what do they call it? It was on Broadway, and it was just, you know, hilarious, as I hear tell. So it's just amazing that kind of talent can have such an impact on pop culture, making fun of it. So I'm like, all right, you know, but it's not like our kids aren't having to go through it, and we're doing what we can. And now they add 3 more that are in junior high and senior high, and they're getting interested. You know, like Kevin, the older one, he's always wanting to, you know, show me a new story. Matter of fact, one this weekend, a supercar, 3D printed supercar. I missed this one. This happened this summer. And he goes, oh, did you hear about this one? I heard about everything. Let me say, oh, I did not hear about that. And we put it up this weekend. Might still be on the front page. A 3D printed supercar, gas powered, darn it, 0-60 in under 2 seconds. 2 seconds. Supercar, 3D printed. Just cause. I'm like, okay, we've got that going for us. You know, they get interested. Fly in the unfriendly skies of America. This is just a, you know, it was on antiwar.com, but, you know, it was a guy that was running Tom Dispatch. And he was, you know, nervous about his activities. You know, kind of like, you know, publishing for Freedom's Phoenix. You know, you start doing a lot of stuff they may not like, and you might be on the list. So he's just talking about his experience with the TSA. And, you know, welcome to the club, man. Oh, this is a good one. Hackers launch balloon probe into the stratosphere to spy on drones. Unlike here on Earth, no pesky amateur radio eavesdroppers or curious hackers monitor the open sky between ground control and a drone, not to mention between the drone and its communications satellite perched miles higher up. Got it. Got all the sick. Got it. Got it. Hackers launched a balloon probe.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
So either you're with us, or you're with somebody else, or you're all by yourself.
Outside my window, red rain falling down. Inside my head, confusion spinning around. Don't like the smell of blood on my hand. Can't stand the sound of drums across the land. How can I say it's not my fight? How can I act like I know what's right?
It's not my fight, man. You know, this is there's going to be a fight, and somebody's got to, you want me to fight it for you, and man, look at, how I grit my teeth. Who else is wanting to enter in there? Oh, it's John McAfee. I will be president. You can laugh all you want. John McAfee from McAfee Antivirus, where it still has his name, but he's, sold it a long time ago, and, you can go be whatever. But got the money. He's kind of a character. And we have his contact information. Mark Victor had him on. He did a podcast one time that had him on, and he really liked him. He said, Ernie, you got to talk to this guy. So we got the information. We just had to be able to hook up. So Donna's on it. You on it, Donna? Donna's on it. So we'll see if we can get John McAfee. Come on. And so he really hit it off with Mark, and they saw things the way they saw him. I will be president. You can laugh all you want. I'll bet you $1 I'll be president, or I would not be doing this, he told reporters. Snickers were heard. Yeah, well, McAfee, founder of the computer antivirus company that bore his name until it was acquired by Intel, is running at the head of his self-created cyber party. Like Donald Trump, he's arguing that his experience running a multi-billion dollar company qualifies him for the presidency. He has focused his platform, unsurprisingly, on security issues and believes the next plane hijacking will be a technological hacking job. We need to fix our technological problems, he said. If someone like me doesn't step into the presidency, we might as well go home. Waving his hands at the crowd that gathered in the press room, he talked about the danger of having a non-technical president in the Oval Office as the country does battle in cyberspace. Asked about policy issues outside of cybersecurity, McAfee was vague. But, so what does he do? Is he campaigning for Carly Fiorina? we need somebody who understands computers. Is that where this is going? There's an article called The CEO and the CIA. I read this this weekend, I think, when I was doing something. And the CEO and the CIA, nationalreview.com article. Now, it goes on and tells you a lot of the stuff that I was sharing with you, summarizing. But, I just want a couple of paragraphs here, and you'll kind of get the idea. What McAfee is talking about is you better understand, you're going to have cyber wars. You're going to have people like, Carly telling you what to do or him telling you what to do. And just better have the guys in there know how to do it. Just do it and get some. The most obvious knock on Fiorina's newly announced presidential bid is that she has never been elected to any government office. But during the Bush presidency, Fiorina walked the corridors of the CIA and other high offices of government, assembling recommendations for national security policy and developing a close working relationship with some of the most powerful officials in the administration. She's already begun to cite these years in an attempt to counter those critics who say she lacks the experience needed to be commander-in-chief. When Hayden moved to the CIA from the NSA, Diaz became his senior counselor. He served as the CIA's main liaison to the advisory board, although he says Hayden and Fiorina had regular private lunch meetings. Now, what Diaz is talking about is there was an advisory board that Fiorina chaired, and it was an advisory board of, technicals, IT people in the industry that advised the CIA. And then they'd take their advice and pick whatever they wanted and go tell somebody who they got a bomb or something. So I'm going, okay, so she's at the top end of the board, had a lot of egos. These were people from academia, retired 3- and 4-star generals, big poobahs from private industry, Diaz remembers. It was a challenging board to run. She would generally sit quietly, ask questions, but you never got a sense she was dominating or bigfooting. But by the end of the meeting, she had gotten exactly what she wanted. Polite, but you couldn't push her around. At first, a member and then the chair of the advisory board, Fiorina had more or less the highest security clearance, Diaz says. The board would meet roughly twice a month, running through an agenda determined by what was concerning Hayden the most. Now, Micah Hayden came up from the NSA, goes to the CIA, brings Carly in, and they have regular, twice a month lunches, and she heads up this advisory board. So this is not an outsider. She's not. The final 2.5 years of the Bush presidency marked a particularly tumultuous time for the CIA. Hayden's predecessor, Porter Goss, a former CIA clandestine officer and congressman, God, man, you can't make this stuff up. Resigned after a turbulent one-year tenure marked by complaints about his management style. The new position of Director of National Intelligence altered the old hierarchy and Gossin, the DNI, Director of National Intelligence. So the new director, that was a new position, Director of National Intelligence, of course. Oh, yeah, that was kind of the DHS, Homeland Security, everything goes through National Intelligence and consolidates for we. So 9/11 doesn't happen again because everybody knew something, but it wasn't all configured or anybody knew anything, you know, kind of thing, as I recall. John Negroponte fought turf battles outside of Washington. General David Petraeus began his surge in Iraq in January of 07. The Israelis launched an airstrike against a suspected Syrian nuclear facility in September 07, and Russia invaded Georgia in the summer of 08. So this is the stuff that was going on at the time. So this is not going to go away. There's more, but when you look on her wiki, you don't see that. You know, the CIA thing, they're kind of playing that down. I'm like, really? Okay, we'll see. It'll come up. Scott Walker drops out of presidential run. Scott Walker plans to announce Monday that he is withdrawing from the 2016 GOP presidential race, making a stunning collapse for the Wisconsin governor who emerged as a rising star within the party after winning fierce showdowns with public sector unions in his home state. The New York Times first reported the news, which has since been confirmed by multiple media outlets. Mr. Walker is expected to announce his decision to drop out at a press conference in Madison, Wisconsin at 6 p.m. Mr. Walker entered the race in July with high hopes of being able to serve as a bridge between the GOP establishment and the grassroots conservatives that are angry with the Republican leaders in Congress and eager to shape up the status quo, blah, 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 blah. So Walker's out. Now, of course, that's making the unions happy because they saw him as, you know, all things evil. So, all right, so let's go to the next one. What do we have here? Anonymous browsing at the library. Now, Pal Gamble, found this of import. There's another thing that he's been covering, the libraries. There's one in New Hampshire that wants to use Tor on their computers and allow anonymous internet browsing. The Department of Homeland Security has pressured them to stop. They're like, oh, no. So this battle is not over, and Powell wanted to show that. But the one that, he got to, we were gone, and he was covering this, making sure we had it on this weekend. Arizona sniper suspect. Now, they arrested two other guys before. They kind of, forgot to tell you about that. They arrested two other guys, and that didn't work out. So they arrested another guy, and instead of getting him wherever they wait until he goes into a crowded Walmart. You got video and everything. Hut, it's all for show. They go in there, and they arrest him in the Walmart, get him in the parking lot, get him whatever, and they got to do the machine gun thing, and, hut, on the floor. And they didn't give him an attorney. He didn't, he didn't do an appearance. He did a video from his jail cell. It's all televised to the world. And he goes, can I say something? Even though he doesn't have an attorney or anything, anything you say. Then he goes, all I have to say is I'm the wrong guy. I tried telling the detectives that. My gun's been in the pawn shop for the last 2 months. I haven't even had access to a weapon. So it's a show, because there's been these, like, a dozen shots fired on the freeways here in Arizona. It's just, who benefits? Cui bono, man. Who benefits? Who's the one that's getting the benefit? Is it the state? Is it the government? It might be a government thing of government. They're trying to pass and do something to the government. And they're botching this up. Call Mark Victor, see if he's going to attorneyize this one. What I wanted to talk about is Derek told me that you were when at MIT that you were familiar with this trusted program module thing.
It's kind of old.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of new that the FCC is going to mandate that you can't change anything in it, and that it gets installed firmware of we rule you, and it reports to home, and there's nothing you can do about it anymore.
Yeah, but this is just proof that the government is inept, because now there's new things like emulation and virtualization at the sim layer level of hardware that can do that same
see,
stuff
this is why I want to talk to Blake. Okay, so help me out here. All right.
So, well, like 21 Inc. just came out with a similar.
All right, about 4 seconds. Here we go. You can tell me all about it.
Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no, no fear here on Declare Your Independence. I'm here in Stancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. And Blake Anderson, another individualist, unafeared, unafeared, unafeared. This is, we know Blake Anderson from his expertise in Bitcoin and such, but that comes from him, you know, I guess, it, lack of a better way of putting it, tasked with go find out about that Bitcoin thing for the central banking he worked for and whatever, and he was the ISR on, and he goes, you know what, I don't work for you guys anymore. And so he went in the Bitcoin space, and he's got, you know, the intelligence to know what's up in the future, and we're going to talk a lot about that. But the big thing is that I wanted to talk to him about, because he's at MIT, and he knows some of the history of this from his generation about the evolution of the concept behind the Clipper chip, which was as the internet first started getting going, as we're first starting doing emails, as Phil Zimmerman's being arrested for having and prosecuted until that just they said, ah, never mind, it was too late, on PGP email encryption. Well, you know, we can communicate privately and the man can't see it, and they're going, yes, you can, and we don't like it. Not at all. So we got to have some kind of chip in your fax, your printer, your email, your TV, your something, so we know everything, the phone's home. Well, it became the trusted, you know, program module, and you got the trusted group of how we're going to program it, and the FCC now saying it's mandated and everything. We're going to have, you know, Mr. MIT, Blake Anderson, explain it to us. He's saying, oh, that's old stuff. I don't know, man. Anything we got to worry about, Blake?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. The trusted platform module is like a secured input-output. It's got a cryptographic processor, persistent memory, and versatile memory. It's a pretty simple piece of equipment. But one of the largest criticisms of stuff like this, and something that was actually brought to the 21 Inc. offering just the other day, is that you can have stuff going through a database and being recorded, and nobody knows about it. So, like, from the standard of Bitcoin, Bitcoin has brought the standard of not trust me a whole bunch, but trustlessness. And the trustlessness standard, when brought to something like this that can be recorded by a database without your knowledge, falls very short. You know what I mean?
So what you're saying is the Bitcoin blockchain technology kind of bypasses whatever the heck they're trying to do, or?
Oh, no, I don't mean to imply that. I mean to just say that the general presence of Bitcoin has brought forth a standard of trustlessness, and the trusted platform module, even just the verbiage, you can kind of be,
yeah,
like,
exactly. The fact that they even say that, I'm going, I'm already scared. You know, my sphincter, you know, puckers, and my hand goes to my hip wallet, and I'm worried about, and I, you know, my left hand's on my gun. I mean, trusted program, whoa, who's gonna come screw me now? Okay,
well, yeah, so, I mean, if you want to do something slick and dirty and really fast, I mean, if you don't know enough to use software and emulation and virtualization to get something secure, you can opt for a trusted platform module, and then, you know, kind of do it the fast, easy, lazy way, but you're not as secure. You would be infinitely better off, especially as a business or somebody that's trying to protect value, to do some extra your research and make sure that you're in control of absolutely every single layer of security communication and everything else. So the Trusted Platform module has lost kind of a lot of development and a lot of following since, you know, it came along. And now there's other things that are replacing it, which was why the 21 Inc. announcement the other day was kind of like, what are you doing? Why is this a pure hardware solution when you could virtualize or emulate so much of this stuff? And it's indicative of the fact, I guess, that there's a lot of people that know a little bit about computers trying to help contribute, and a lot less of the people that I thought were in this space, which are really logicians that went into computer science with a foundational knowledge of logic and can really transcend the problems that we have and invent new ones. That's not what's happening. We see people trying to be middlemen and use software as a service to middleman the crap out of different stuff that is really starting to need none. So I think that the fact that you could see that this was going on and ask me about it is actually comically observant of you.
Okay, let me go ahead and, you know, try and, what'd you just say? So anyway, I'm going to try and decipher this. When they came up with this trusted program module, is under the promise that, well, you don't want to have programs or downloads or virus or whatever that's not approved, and we have this module that helps us with the signature if somebody has some kind of watermark in their documents of you're allowed, and it's okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like a watermark.
So this is, but that means that somebody's doing a list now of what can and can't be put on it. And this kind of, it's like Hewlett Packard and Microsoft's conspiring, I can't put Linux on my hardware that I bought and it's freaking mine, you know? So I'm going, what this does is at a fundamental level somehow under the promise that they're going to keep me safer, is they're limiting what I can and cannot do or what I have to do with my computer. How far off am I?
Well, yeah, and that's exactly the case. And I mean, there's three types of computers relative to processors. There's your regular run-of-the-mill computer. It's like a delivery van. It does everything pretty well. You can play Aprion or a game on it, or, you know, you can do something else. And then there's another kind of computer called an FPGA, or like a graphics card, a field programmable gate array. And that does, you know, a handful of things, not everything, and it does them really fast and really well. And then at the other end of the spectrum, the opposite of a general purpose computer, you have an ASIC, or an application specific integrated circuit. And what you can do from left to right when you go from the computer all the way to more specialized stuff goes down more and more and more, and the efficiency goes up. When you have specific hardware like this, it only does one thing, and it doesn't do anything else. And that can be a good shortcut or jumpstart for somebody who needs to get something done, and they just don't want random people to see their credit card information. I mean, there could be a use case there, but as far as communicating things that could get you, you know, in trouble, you don't really want to trust a third party. Trust is not your friend.
Okay. So the trust that they're selling this under is trust of what? Of them saying it's okay to run this program, or is a list of programs or a mechanism for, I mean, what am I trusting? This trusted program module is helping me what?
Well, you're trusting that it's going to encrypt things and send them around, I believe, with SHA-1. The newer might have better stuff, but you're trusting basically that you're not going to be recorded in a database, and without being able to go and vet everything that's gone into your hardware, you can't do that.
That was it. Wait. This very piece of chip hardware that they're going to put malware in that I can't see, can't change, can't anything, that phones home to mama, you know, it was sold under the idea that it wasn't going to do that?
It's sold under the idea that it will obfuscate important communications, but you have to trust that the person that made it isn't recording all that thing for themselves.
Well, see, that was the thing, you know, where Think Penguin started getting in. Christopher Wade, he's going, when I built Think Penguin and I got a laptop, I finally, you know, I'm always, you know me, man, I'm screaming about my grandma adjust button for everything. And, oh, you just push this button, you just this, you just that. Well, finally, when we were at this last Pork Fest, he had a table there, and it was, you know, immediately I saw what was going on. So what you're saying is that you have open sourced hardware, every chip of everything you've accumulated and put together, and this can be a secure, and on this platform, we've made it to where it easily loads Linux Mint, and you're ready to go out of the box and, you know, put in your password and boom, done, you're rock and roll. Is that what you're saying? Yes. Grandma adjust button. Okay. So I bought one. I got the laptop. I love this thing. Man made, you turn it on. The time it takes my Windows 7 to boot up, I'm already done with what I was going to do. Turn on the other one, and it's off, and I'm in bed. You know, I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? And then here comes the FCC saying, you know that trusted program module? Oh, now it's got to be mandated that it has all kinds of malware in there. You can't see it. You can't change it. You got to use it. Get over it. More with Blake Anderson about it.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance.
Okay, is that a semi-accurate description or what?
Well, it's not inaccurate. It's just I wouldn't call it malware. I would call it like spying. The real risk isn't your computer doing stuff that you don't want it to. It's that it fundamentally operates in a way that kicks back information to Big Daddy. And it's funny, as I'm reading these criticisms of this technology, they're coming from the Free Software Foundation, and they're written by Richard Stallman.
Right. He was supposed to be on today. He has to come on next week because he was meeting with government officials, I think Donna said. You know, he's in Italy or something. And he was going to Skype in, but it conflicted with some meeting that he had set up. So he'll come on next week. But this is, yeah, no, it's, I mean, who else are you going to ask?
Well, exactly. And it's like, look at the name of the different organizations. Richard Stallman is speaking on behalf of the Free Software Foundation. And these chuckleheads are like, trusted platform module, trusted, trust group. And it's like, I trust Richard because he's not telling me to trust him.
Right. Well, this trusted group, I mean, you look on there and you see, you know, they, them, those, you know, it's, you know, all the main gimme. And that was one. Have you been paying any attention to the GOP presidential? Do you care?
I love Donald Trump. I think he's lampooning the entire system amazingly. If he wins, that'll be scary. But until then, it's funny.
Carly Fiorina, as I scratched the surface on her, all of a sudden I went, holy crap. You know, when after 9/11, you know, Hayden went to her from the NSA and she supplies a bunch of hardware and then here they go. And then he goes to the CIA and she becomes chair of the advisory group to the CIA. She has the highest CIA running around walking the halls of clearance of I get to know. And
yeah, but I mean, who hasn't done that?
Yeah. Well, right. But then, you know, well, I'm. They're trying to portray her as an outsider, kind of like Trump. And then in 10, she ran against Boxer for the U.S. Senate in California. She's been in the intelligence community of supplying of we need more. And then she gets up on stage and screams how many more ships and we got to bomb somebody. And I'm going, wow, man, where is she from? You scratch the surface and you go, holy crap. And a lot of her CIA stuff is not on her wiki. The other thing was I thought was interesting is when I go to look at, I come to find out she's economic advisor or advisor to John McCain during his 08 campaign. And I'm going, well, that makes me feel all kinds of wonderful. You know? And
yeah, exactly. She's an outsider.
Right. And I'm going, she's not an outsider. You know, she's like one of, they're pulling people off the bench. You know, they're getting desperate, man. They need somebody with, you know, that's, you know, inside that's been kind of support horse for a lot of this stuff. And they're starting to scan and see who can we get that's been in with us. And she's definitely in. So she gets up there and she's just, I don't know. I still think it's going to be, you know, Hillary and Jeb. But if it's Jeb, you know, she's jockeying for a cabinet position of something, you know. So I'm just, this trusted group, did you know that was going on?
That what was going on?
The trusted group of how we're going to rule you with our program module people?
Oh, yeah. I mean, subverting and transcending hardware solutions for this stuff has been a huge priority for a long time for people that understand beyond just a base level what's going on in computer science and how to move forward. Virtualization of all things has been huge, huge, huge recently.
Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about this. We're back in 10 seconds. Hold on.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Good Y'all get your money for nothing and your tricks for free. Okay, Blake Anderson is an MIT-educated cryptographic economist and computer scientist, having worked in Fortune 25 finance as a math-based security project manager. He now works with Bitcoin derivatives, contracts, financial products, working full-time with Bitcoin behind the scenes for years prior to IRS direction. What the heck does that mean? Blake is now happiest when speaking publicly about technology empowering the individual. Prior to IRS direction, what the heck does that mean?
Well, it basically is my admission that I'm a spook. No, it means that I didn't say a whole lot about Bitcoin publicly before the IRS ruled on what it was, because that could have gone either way.
Why do you care what they had to say? I didn't understand. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I worked for a bank and I was, you know, bringing money into Bitcoin and talking to people about it and things like that. So I was behind the scenes working on getting people involved. And then finally, when the IRS was like, okay, we're not going to throw you in prison the second we figure out that you're working with this, I was like, cool, I want to speak publicly about it now, too.
All right. I got it. What are you doing?
I'm just a coward, basically, is what you're making me admit here.
Okay. No, I'm hip. You know, they got big guns. You want to fly? You know, what are you doing now? What are you working on?
Well, right now I'm working on talking to a lot of people to find more tenable ideas than most of the venture capitalists in the space care to wait for. There's been a lot of people with a lot of money in the Bitcoin space and the venture capital space that don't care about waiting for a good idea. They'll just throw money at anything, tell other people to do it too, and then come up with just stuff that's not good. Like, I mean, 21 Inc. got $115 million to come up with a computer that, if it took them longer than 10 minutes to throw together, it's an indictment of the level of skill and understanding of that whole team. So I'm working on trying to talk to people that have actual tenable plans to expand the circle of trustlessness that Bitcoin represents. I'm actually talking to a certain individual right now that has a really robust solution for the trusted platform module, but I actually cannot talk about it in depth technically how it works. But that might be good for you, because that would be really boring and I probably wouldn't explain it well anyway.
Well, you know, this is, I'm wondering, of course, there's going to be anything that the government, okay, God, I went through this in the mid-90s, when they had all kinds of computer stuff and the personal computer, and it's getting to where people can do things and be encrypted and all this stuff. They go, wait. We need to have a standardization of modems. We have standardization of motherboard and chips of kind of standard way we wanted of the Clinton and Reno and Clipper chip and standard. And by the time they're talking about how they're going to standard, it went three or four generations from the while they were talking, you know, and it goes, it doesn't matter anymore. Well, it seems like this is the same thing with this. It's not so much a piece of hardware. It's a philosophy behind it. And this hardware, whatever it was sold as, has the capability, and now the FCC is trying to mandate its use, and not only its use in it being in your computers, and certainly by just, you know, big companies buying a whole bunch of motherboards of only the manufacturer makes it with this one because of the biggest orders from the people that want it for whatever the heck reason. So they have this hardware on there. Then the FCC is saying, you know, we don't want Blake Anderson to be able to go into the trusted program module and change the firmware. We don't want them to customize their router. We don't want them to use the encryption to do whatever the heck it is that they want to do, because it interferes with what we want to do. And what we want to do is have it phone home, tell us everything that you're doing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the excuse that they would give is they don't want me to mess up the secured input output, which is kind of a tenable reason. But at the same time, it's like, oh, how convenient. Qui bono? Who benefits from everybody using this system that may or may not be sending information back to a database in a fashion that's unknowable even to an advanced computer science user of the hardware?
Yep.
The government seems to benefit quite an awful lot.
Yeah, well, the government, industry, they, them, those, banks, not me, okay? So those that won't leave me alone, let's put it that way. So you're saying that when you have to solve this very problem, they're threatening, there are other solutions that are better, easier, faster, software. What are you saying?
Oh, yeah, big time. Well, let's just take, for example, the Bitcoin computer that 21 Inc. came out with yesterday. Huge embarrassment. Everybody that knows anything about computer science is laughing themselves into hysteria. what they like, one of the things they said that you can do is you can, you know, create a store in a hardware to hardware environment, and you can transact value back and forth, which is, you know, kind of cool. It's a little bit niche for, you know, what like 10,000 people on Earth own like more than one Bitcoin. So the developer community has to be a very small portion of what that would be. And I don't know what figures they use to try to figure out how many people are going to buy this $400 rock. But one of the things that's a benefit is you can, you know, residually pay somebody. Well, on the same day ProTip was released, I mean, I think we've talked about ChangeTip a little bit. ChangeTip was a casino model where your information would go in, it would all be mixed up and commingled and then come back out. That's not a very good model. It's very prone to failure. Now we have ProTip, which is a decentralized model that all works on your local system that actually captures Bitcoin addresses from the websites that you go to and the media that you view. So there's actually a recorded timer every time it sees a Bitcoin address on a page, and you stay there for a long time reading the content. It's like, yo, you were entertained by such and such Bitcoin address for such and such time. Here's the information that you read around it. Would you like to donate them some money? And you can say yes, or you can say, you know what, I'm just going to load up my entire ProTip wallet and let it automatically figure out where I'm spending time and just trickle out, you know, however much you're willing to spend on entertainment. What this will do is it will disempower centralized media sources from controlling what gets sponsored and what doesn't. So over a long enough timetable, this is some extremely powerful technology, even if it doesn't come to, you know, always be its current version. If somebody forks this, or if it continues to be developed, this can really have a huge impact on media. And for people to say that you need hardware to do that is just is completely not true.
Okay, wait. Let me get this straight. There is a new. It would have to what? Have your cookie? It tells you how long you're on a site. How would it know who you are?
It's called ProTip. You go to, I think, protip.is, and then you.
So ProTip is the cookie.
Well, yeah, it's a little application that gets installed on Chrome, and it's an open source application. You can go into GitHub and look at everything that it's doing, so you can ensure that it's not, you know, rifling information back to somebody else.
Oh yeah, I'll go take a look at that. I'll let you know. Like, well, yeah, I would freaking know.
Well, but somebody would. If you Googled it and you were like, yo, did anybody ever look at the GitHub on ProTip and make sure that this stuff isn't, like, if it were a huge honeypot, somebody would say so. They'd be like, yo, this project on GitHub is stealing everybody's information. It would be a gigantic scandal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Like the Bitcoin group the other day was censored, and it was censored because it was like spam, scam, or socially deceptive content. And it's obviously not. And if it were, Reddit would rip us apart, like, after the next 5 minutes the show ended. You know what I mean?
All right, so we're going to find, there's an application that goes on that while you're searching sites, if they take Bitcoin in support, it either lets you know or automatically deducts from a Bitcoin account the itty bitty little bitty baby amounts, you know, the amount that you're using their site. Is that what you're saying?
Okay. Yep, allow you to program money.
All right, well, more on security when we get back with Blake Anderson. A lot of stuff going on out there.
This is your Roberts & Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Tuesday, gold is down $10 at $1,123 per ounce. Silver is 38 cents lower at $14.85 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $230. Roberts & Roberts is your trusted source for physical precious metals for nearly 40 years. Give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
The 21, you were saying, I don't know, I've been gone all weekend, and last week my son got married, Forrest got married in the forest with his, you know, and there,
congratulations.
It was a big thing. Well, it was a surprise. It was supposed to be for his birthday. He had like, you know, 60, 70 people there, you know, friends and family, and we're all in the kids, and all the kind of, and you pull into the, out in the forest there, and it says, welcome to Veronica and Forrest's wedding weekend. You know,
the old throw him a party and trick him into a wedding.
Exactly.
Oldest trick in the book.
Well, I tell you, it worked. I mean, people would have paid, you know, it's kind of your near the Sedona Red Rock of the overlook of the cliff in the forest of the. It was awesome. So we had a good time. And I, you know, tried to keep up a little bit and so on. But this 21, you tip thing, what do you call it? The 21 thing. You know,
Pro tip. I mean, it's
not pro tip. The other you were saying.
Oh, the 21 Inc. Bitcoin computer.
Okay, well, oh, so. It's a miner or what? What are you talking about?
Well, that's the thing. It's a Raspberry Pi glued to an ASIC called Utility. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. It's like, oh, we've got some software on there. And you go through like the command line of like what you can do with the software, and you're like, this thing is a joke. Like, what in the hell? I'm actually in IRC channels and a whole bunch of background stuff right now, talking to a whole bunch of other Bitcoin experts, and we're all ripping it apart. We're all mad that they took that much money and didn't do anything. Everybody's embarrassed.
Took that money from what? They had a crowdfunding thing?
No, they raised $116 million in venture capital as a stealth startup. And I guess just like the dot-com bubble, there was a lot of dot-com businesses that failed. And what did that do? It loosened up a whole bunch of capital and gave it to people that were smarter. So, you know, maybe this will be the second coming of that. But at the same time, it's...
So somebody gave them a bunch of money. They put on a good show and wore a shiny tie. And they gave them a bunch of money. And they came out with a Raspberry with an ASIC. And that was it?
Yep. People are like, you're going to be able to make some Wi-Fi grid-to-grid mesh network with it and then have machine-to-machine transfer payments, stuff like that. It's like, you don't, like, why would you need a specific piece of hardware to do that automatically? And what's your, like, sale environment? Like, who's going to buy this in a large enough quantity to make it so that your botnet that you have scammed in there in a violation of mutual assent can hash you guys' money back to your thing? I mean, the entire thing is such a hyper-big scam. It's insane.
Well, I mean, intentionally from the beginning, they didn't know what they were doing. They were just, you know...
No, it seems to be intentionally. They have a...
Dazzling people with BS?
They have a Bitcoin miner that they give to you as a piece of equipment, and then they take a portion of that hash rate back, unless I'm misinformed. But doing that is stealing electricity and a clear violation of mutual assent or meeting of the minds. So, like, why did they get any money? I have no idea.
All right. Well, you know, this is just one story of 15 gazillion in the space. And, you know, it's going to get taken care of, like, by you guys. It already has been. People know now, right? I mean...
I guess people know on the back end. I've been talking to everybody behind the scenes, and then I am out on Twitter now. I really ripped him, and somebody forwarded that tweet to Mark Andreessen, and I was like, you know, whatever, I don't care. He said those things, he did those things. And I'm actually in a channel right now, and somebody's like, I hope they focus on bigger challenges. I hope they don't fail. I hope they pivot. And I just said, I dislike apologists trying to rationalize bad business.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Explaining it to us, you know, Bitcoin, just to, you know, kind of what we're talking about here. When Bitcoin first came out, it was, you know, the networks were on everybody's little bitty laptop, and then it got to where, you know, it's all about proof of work and solving a hard problem that you win in every 10 minutes and you get these Bitcoin, and I got a faster laptop than you, and then, ooh, we're going to use, you know, a graphics card because it, you know, kind of more centered on performing a certain task, and they customize it to mine Bitcoin, and ooh, it's whipping butt, and they go, oh, we can do, I guess what you call an ASIC, you know, which stands for what?
Application-specific integrated circuit. Think of a regular computer as a van. Think of a graphics card as a Ferrari. And think of an ASIC as a drag racer. The drag racer cannot turn at all. If you try to turn while it's doing what it does as fast as it can, it'll break it.
Okay, so here we have, you know, for specific use, is, you know, just crunching numbers so I can get me some more Bitcoin and I win. You know, well, what happens? It went from laptops to now big giant server farms of I got big oil cooled of by my miner of whatever the heck. And then somebody comes out with a new machine that says, you know, we're going to take a Raspberry Pi and we're going to, you know, marry it with a whatever. And we're going to put it here and flip it on, and we'll, like, sell a gazillion of these to everybody and give us money. So they gave him $100-something million. It comes out on the market, and Blake's making fun of it because he's a nice guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, kind of. Yeah, this company, 21 Inc., has they got this crazy valuation, like over $100 million. If you've ever watched the show Silicon Valley, you know that they've made fun of hyper-massively unsustainable valuations. And it's like, if you've gotten that much money, your ideas have to be extremely good and tenable. When you come out with an idea like they did, it's an indictment of the skill and intellect of your team and your entire business model from the floor all the way to the top. So what they have is they have a last-generation ASIC. So it's not competitive anymore, and they have it glued to a machine, and it's going to, you know, help everybody out somehow. But it's like, let me get this straight. You have an application-specific integrated circuit. It's only good for one use, and it's not the fastest, and you're going to try this to sell that to people. Like, if you have the slowest drag racer around, how much is that thing worth?
I don't know.
It doesn't win any races.
Having fun.
You have fun, exactly. But if it's your computer on your desk, you're like sitting on top of this thing while it goes fast isn't too much fun.
Okay, so this is, you know, being involved in the hardware and software side of this, that when you have these kinds of surveillance mechanisms that are coming on, I mean, one thing that gives, you know, some pause, you sit there and laugh, is that John McAfee is announced he's running for president.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I pooped a little when I heard about that because I was so excited.
Well, that, I mean, what does that mean? He made a point of saying you need someone that understands, you know, the real threat before you're going to have some president's going to fight some cyber war. I mean, you know, it's going to be 13-year-olds versus 17-year-olds, you know, around the planet or something. And I'm going, Okay, so here comes Carly Fiorina. She's definitely industry. I understand. We're going to kick some ass and need some aircraft carriers, you know, for the servers to tell them when to launch or something. I mean, I don't really understand the real threats, and that's why I wanted to talk to you, because I'm getting the impression, I know the philosophy was there. I experienced it over 20 years ago. They're like, if they can, they will, and they want to, and if they can, man, they either going to or they already are, and a lot of times they already are. And now with this Think Penguin thing, they're going, the FCC is going to mandate that this chip, this trusted program module that now is ubiquitous all over in everybody's phone, tablet, computer, laptop, you know, is that they can now, it's a phone home thing, and they're going to mandate that you're not allowed to look inside. You're saying the promise that they had for that hardware could be solved with software anyway, but what about the, is that a real threat, what the FCC is doing now? If they mandate that you can't look inside some of the hardware on your computer, are we screwed? Is it done? Is it over? Do we do something else? What?
Well, I mean, it depends on what type of person you are. If you're a computer scientist, you'll subvert it. If you're, you know, one of the mass populace, it might be difficult and things like that. It's just that the government doesn't really make computers. The people do. And yeah, the big companies can have an edge for a while, but if they start doing things and making things that people don't want, competition will take over and people will learn how to get things.
Not if there's a law! There's a law.
That's true. Yeah, if there's a law, I mean, it makes it really, really difficult. I mean, you're right. It does have the potential to really slow some things down, and the government is always looking for the best way to do that, in my opinion. Like, Jeb wanted to limit how much people can use encryption and how strong it is, and that's just indicative of the fact that they're struggling to retain control.
Yeah, no, this is, well, Paul Rosenberg, you know, I called him, and you know, he's one of the guys, like, you know, crypto hippie back more my age in the day of this is starting and Rick Stallman kind of thing. And I'm going, did you know about this? He goes, yeah. And he sends me a link while we're talking, an article you wrote 2 years ago in October 13 saying, hey, man, this trusted program module thing, anybody that buys a Windows computer that has this kind of, you know, a threat to humanity or something. I mean, literally, it was some big giant statement like that. So I'm just going, wow, how come you didn't tell me about this like every time you talk to me? And because he went on like you did. He goes, yeah, well, it's not a big deal for us computer geeks. You just this and you just that and you just. And I go on, more just buttons. You guys are always like that, okay? But I'm telling you, grandma is not going to undo, redo, go around kind of. I'm looking for like the Think Penguin that came out, here's the hardware with the software, and you're done. What their complaint is now it's getting to the point that they can't even buy components for a computer to build without it in there and mandated, or a manufacturer, they'll make it without it.
Yeah, I mean, when you have all kinds of ridiculous, you know, bonuses and benefits as a result of complying with regulation, it makes it so that the big companies that are hemorrhaging value because of your socialist currency really have to do that. So it's a problem. Maybe not as much for me, but for everybody, and then that does affect me. So it's not nothing.
Yeah, no, Blake gets to be secret. The rest of us are screwed, okay?
So, well, I've had to be secret for a long time. I mean, I think that a lot of people should learn to use general-purpose technology and create manual encrypted VNC tunnels and things like that, but people don't usually want to.
Yeah, well, first they have to know what you just said, okay? Then you got to know how to do it. You know, this is a big, giant market opportunity. It's what I was waiting for with Think Penguin. When they came, I'm going, are you kidding me? I've been screaming for you guys. How long have you been around? Well, a few years. I go, a few years? Well, how the hell am I just finding out about it now? Well, they went to Porkfest to do that very thing, to introduce themselves to the Liberty community. They're going, look, these are the people that should. I go, yeah, they should. You know, so no sooner than I put the banner ad up on the site promoting, endorsing them, and all of a sudden they're like, hey, we got to deal with this problem of everything that we were about, everything that we wanted to solve, all the things like you're talking about that came up with hardware and software solutions of here we go, and the government's trying to make it illegal for them to do it. And I'm going, I've been through this before. It was the mid-90s. So you're saying that, you know, is on the horizon there, is there going to be chip makers, motherboard makers, computer makers, Raspberry Pi boosting kind of multi-parallel stacking of, I got a 5-foot-high stack of raspberries or something that's going to give me the ability of Ma and Pa can learn this? I mean, is there something on the horizon in hardware and software that I don't have to be as worried?
Well, I mean, like, I can bum everybody the hell out for sure. Excuse my language, but we have socialist currency and we have collectivist policy and regulatory capture that's going to continue to make the hardware manufacturers smaller and more concentrated in this country. Other countries are pretty much socialist and want to control their populations too. They're a bunch of tax farms. That macro situation leads us to more centralized creation of complex technology. It's too hard to make on your own terms, and that's going to continually lead us into traps like the one that you're illustrating.
And the solution to all that, Blake Anderson's going to save the world when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, another declaring your independence kind of guy, Blake Anderson, when we come back in just a little bit. Solutions. We see it's bad. And then, you know, the hardware, software solutions to this. See, I would like to have this TPM thing addressed directly. You know, I'm going, okay, is this or is this chipset on probably most computers that you buy now? Likely, yes, right?
You know, I'm not sure.
You know, I was asking Paul, and he said, when you order, if you go to the manufacturer and you intentionally ask them not to put it on there, you know, they won't. You know, until now, that's one thing they're trying to mandate its inclusion in all the retail computers. And I'm going,
absolutely. I mean, I'm just not prepared to say which hardware is going to include it and which isn't, and then have people go and, you know, get burned. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, no. I'm just saying that it's ubiquitous. So they're going to, you know, and we got all the information. And,
yeah, the counter's up to like 2 billion some devices. And if you watch the counter, it's going up like 5 numbers every time you're looking at it. So, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of devices.
Wow. They're keeping track? Okay. Well, that's good.
Oh, yeah, they're keeping track.
Damn. Okay, so the solution is, see, I'm looking for, there's always a free market solution. You know, it always happens. But it gets to the point.
We don't have a free market.
Well, yeah, see, that's my point, is that they'll come up with an idea, they'll have it, and they'll go, oh, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to buy that, you know, VW Golf or whatever Passat here in America with the diesel engine that gives you 70 miles to the gallon. You're not allowed. Why? Because we said, you know,
it's bad for the economy. We need to shoot ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, so you know, so this stuff. Oil. So I'm wondering if there is a solution. I get, you know, from, you know, Alibaba on, you know, out of India, the thing that runs Linux that, you know, suck it and I do, and it shows up on the, because the trusted program module, the one thing that I saw in there is it gave them the capacity to nix your computer from access to the internet. They go, you are a threat. We flipped the switch and you're not allowed. Or if you have without it, they'll go, oh, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to access the internet because you don't have the TPM. And I'm going, wow. So all the more reason to have our own internet, you know, made safe or whatever.
Yeah,
the hell.
Exactly.
You know, so then we'll talk about that a little bit. All right, here we go.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock and Blake Anderson. We're going to try and solve the... I don't know, something. You know, I just want to be able to communicate and not be surveilled all the time. You know, I want to be able to have, you know, some mechanism by which I can express myself to friends and family and communicate and things. You know, like this weekend, you know, you go up there, there's 70 people at my son's wedding up in the forest. They all had, fortunately, there was a cell tower around somewhere. We were at 4G. Okay, I mean, we're up by Flagstaff out, and the highway wasn't too far away. I mean, yet late at night, you could hear the trucks or something. So, it, you know, wasn't too much, you know, out in the middle of the wilderness because they're bringing their big fifth-wheel trailer kind of thing, you know. So, you had like four of those there. And we're all there camping, having a good time, got tents up and so on. 4G. So, what happens? Well, everybody and their grandma's got their cell phone taking pictures. Well, if you had an iPhone, which, you know, a lot of my family are in iPhones, they have like a group picture dump of theirs. Literally thousands of pictures were taken and wham, it's all in one thing. And I'm going, wow. You know, that. So does the man automatically get all that? If they
have their way. It doesn't mean that they don't get it. It doesn't mean that there's not some other kind of capture point, but it wouldn't be the TPM or the Trusted Party Module. That's more with encryption, with the base layer infrastructural access to your device, backdoors through your encryption, things like that would be the risk. Is that happening for sure? Well, we can't say for sure, but, you know, qui bono, you theorize as to what would happen.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about that specific, the pictures. My point is... I want, as an individual, as a father, as a human being, as a husband, as a business partner, as a media journalist, as a whatever, you know, to be able to, I purchase hardware with the expectation of it, you know, I'm purchasing what I want and yes. What I don't want. I remember when they first came out with OnStar, Chevy truck, a friend of mine paid $700 to have the OnStar taken out. He goes, I don't want it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
yeah, there was the Anonymous versus Sony a while back, where Sony was like, here, all you young people that are good at computers have our PlayStations. Oh, but if you modify them at all, you're done and you don't get to do anything. And we're going to have all kinds of really, really hard stuff happen. And then Anonymous and the internet was like, oh, we don't think so, Sony. And then Sony basically was like, oh, yeah. What are you going to do about it? Which to this day is like the absolute worst thing that you can possibly do. Never taunt the internet. They got $1 billion bloody nose from Anonymous after saying, what are you going to do about it? They lost $1 billion as a result of hacks and security breaches and stuff. So the populace doesn't like having hardware that they don't control and they can't do what they want with. But PlayStations and phones are a little bit different. I mean, are people going to care as much about their phone as children do about their PlayStations? I don't know.
We're going to find out. This is like a dystopian future sci-fi novel being written right now. So my question,
right now we're in the age of centralization. Everything is quick and dirty and insecure and centralized and at risk of nuclear fallout. And it's some of the worst times in history right now. We know just enough to hurt ourselves.
Well, I'm wondering if there is a company out there. I mean, that's what I'm building up to, is a solution. And you're going, it doesn't matter. Put the chip, don't, whatever. I got, you know, skills, and I put the little dongle that goes into the USB Ethernet of the whatever, and I kick their ass. I mean, you know, I'm...
Oh, not necessarily. Not necessarily. I mean, this could go all the way up to the National Institute of Technology and Standards and encryption backdoors and stuff. Like, this could go a lot deeper than my skill level would allow me to subvert unless I was really, 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 really going for the gold and creating systems that communicate absolutely and fundamentally securely using older technology. technology that I know exactly what's involved. So, I mean, it is a big problem. And what's the solution? Really, I don't know, like to vote for Bernie Sanders and have him bring it all crashing down as fast as possible so that we can start to decentralize and have individualism come up. It's going to need to be a macro transcendence of the problem. What's a specific solution? Those are going to be very difficult to find in this hellish sea of collectivism.
You know, that's one thing, a conversation I've been having of late as I go around. We need to catch up more after the show. We'll talk a little bit. But I tell you, you know, I've been really looking, is there a place that you can just go and be left alone? Well, not really. Every municipality, every layer of government, every location on freaking planet, and certainly in the United States of America, is all targeted at surveilling, targeting, categorizing, taxing, and controlling every single human life. And there's so many ways of doing one. Wow, it's a philosophy battle. It's leave me aloneism versus we're not. You know, so I'm wondering, in technology, is the innovations in satellite technology, meshing, you know, space travel. I mean, you know, servers on the moon. I mean, you know, what is there things out there that give you hope as we're going to be able to communicate with each other and transfer information without being able to be surveilled on everything?
Well, I mean, technology moves faster than the ability of the corporate government to regulate, which is a positive that we can take away and be happy about. But there does need to be some kind of fundamental shift soon on a pretty wide scale, because the fiat debt crisis is becoming completely unsustainable. It's a Ponzi scheme, but even worse than a Ponzi scheme, because the units that are being traded around, while there's no business model that actually returns a profit, the units that are being traded around are debt. They're not even positive equity. They're not worth anything. So the global fiat Ponzi scheme is coming to an end. And when it does, there's going to either be the last gasp of collectivism to try to double down even more, or we're going to be able to cast it off. And I think that we want technology to do that. What's the best way to do it? I think to invest in and hold and use Bitcoin so that we can actually have mediums of exchange, which are the most saleable good, which aren't freezable, and can inform and enable us to do other things. Make synthetic blood, go to the moon, and build stuff there. These kinds of technological breakthroughs that don't happen because our socialist currency takes all of our human value away and slows down progress to a point where we might as well be using barter.
You know, that's a good way of putting it. That's a good rant. Did you practice that one? I like that. I'm going to rip it off.
I've never practiced. I've just had this conversation so many times, you know?
Well, you know, I can see it's the slow. It's, you know, it kind of goes with my, you know, Anarchapoco speech where I did, where's my flying car? Well, the reason I don't have a flying car now is because freaking government's in the way.
Yep.
You know, so the march of the advancement of humanity would stun, you know, the most advanced civilization, the speed that we would have if you just let the free market reign, you know? So I'm where are you positioning yourself in this new, because you're relatively young. I mean, heck, are you even in your 30s?
Yeah, I'm going to turn 30 this winter, right around Christmas. So yeah, I'm not even at the end of Logan's Run yet. Dead by 30.
Yeah, you're still able to go to the mall. Okay, so I'm going. All right, so you're positioning yourself in the future, knowing this. There is going to be a market for leave me aloneism. I feel that. You know, that's what, you know, I touted, and we were very successful in just, you know, making a big deal out of things like Think Penguin and Made Safe and Outer Net and all these CubeSats and all that. I mean, I can see that it's all of a sudden going to be overnight. You know, it's not a secret, but you know, all of a sudden it becomes on people's radar screen that all this desire to be left alone and the technical ability to do it is going to be there, and it's not going to have borders or boundaries. It's going to be a generation thing, not a geography thing. And I'm going, okay, how are you positioning yourself in that environment?
Well, I mean, it's tough to know. The age of information was kind of a little bit starting as I was growing up, and I was a part of it a little bit, but technology wasn't that great when I was young. Now we have younger people like Vitalik and people that had the full benefit of smartphones and stuff since they were really young, and those people are really, 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 really smart. I would hate to be the government, and it would be my job to hoodwink those people because they have a grounding in logic and tenability. You cannot gaslight them or use fallacy or try to rationalize things that are not rational. And I think that that will have a huge impact on what happens in the future. Right now, we're so slow, but you can't keep prisoners off of heroin that are locked up. So people are resourceful. And when the government gets out of the way, it's going to be explosively productive.
Yeah, I know that, but there's, you know, my best word picture I can do, came to me here recently is just, you know, government is like the little Volkswagen bug police car with the lights going on in your rear view mirror out in the desert. And it just, you know, keeps slipping further and further back. You can't hear them. You can barely see them. And all of a sudden they go over the horizon and you forgot they were ever there. You know, it's just technology in the free market, people are just going plaid and are warp speeding way past the ability to even regulate. And a lot of times they're just not there until you're on the land, until you're actually take a space, got an address. So I'm wondering how we're going to extricate ourselves from that. Live in the clouds? Maybe. More in the after
show. If you're looking for...
There, now we can just talk without worrying about whatever. How much time you got you can spend with me?
Oh, I got a few minutes. Okay. I was going to say, alone we stand, together we fall apart.
There we go. You know, one time I did it, it was a protest thing. We had a newspaper box out in front of the federal building, and they're trying to get us to move it, and we wouldn't, and blah, blah, blah. But the reporter that did it one time, he goes, you know, Ernie, you're always, you know, getting noticed, you know. But he goes, you know, when you stand up for something, you get noticed because everyone else is on their knees. And yeah. I go, wow, man, that just had a big impact on me. You know, and then one, Barry Hess, a good friend of mine, is always in poly, goes, sometimes to stand up, you just got to sit down. And a lot of times, what he meant is just not comply. You just, no, I'm not playing. And so with all these things and the technical ability and the knowledge that you have, and having been at MIT and development a lot of this stuff during the buzz and sitting around, eating pizza, drinking beer, smoking dubs, whatever, you know, and contemplating the future on this stuff, I have to, you're the perfect guy to ask, you know, how do you see this unfolding? It's just going to be the whole thing falls of its own weight and a digital barter system of Bitcoin and leave me aloneism just kind of resurrects itself. But you see, they'll target people. When you have, you know, the Open Bazaar, the Silk Road, you know, I just got a book. We interviewed the guy, Thieves Emporium. You know, Max Hernandez, it came out with this, everybody's been pimping for me. And so I'm going, okay, well, I'll read, I have him on. And the whole concept is, it's just a philosophy that we're up against. So that's why the Levolution was so important. It's just people need to know what the problem was, how it's defined, where to put your effort. And it's not in any collective voting government,
exactly,
kind of anything.
Exactly. And once they pull you into that, you lose. Because, I mean, I would rather die standing than live life on my knees. And when enough people agree with that and they decide to engage in the supreme art of war, which is to undermine the economic resources and the ability of your enemy to succeed, then we win.
Okay,
we don't
how?
Win by having 3% of the nation take up arms or anything ridiculous like that. That would be suicide.
Yeah, but I mean, how? I mean, I agree with you. I understand. I mean, I'm looking at, you know, the grandma adjust button on everything, making technology easy and for the masses of I get to thwart by pushing this button and I'm encrypted. And, you know, and they go, oh, that never, and you can't. I go, really? It's called Bitcoin. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bitcoin is
awesome because of that, though. I mean, you're right. Bitcoin is a decentralized, autonomous chain that's owned by nobody. And the government is like, uh-oh.
Well, my big thing was from the beginning, talking to all you guys, I'm going, if they can, they will, they are. It's, you know, where's the central point of whatever we rule you, hegemonic decisions made unilaterally on the blah, 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 blah. And then I get this, you know, Hearn and Gavin thing where they, and we rule you and get over it, and we introduce and we're trying to force this one alteration in the code. And I'm going,
yeah, that fork. Did you listen to my Bitcoin group about that?
No. Tell me everything.
Oh, well, in the first 5 minutes of the Bitcoin group that we talked about the XT fork, I'm pretty sure that I killed it. And a lot of the other people that came out against it used a lot of my quotes to be like, Mike Hearn does not have strong enough free market principles to give him undue control over the network. We're not going to push through a fork because it would make it so that double spends were possible and it would ruin the network. And just, I basically went through every single reason that it was not a good idea. And then after that, nobody would blow their credibility on saying that that it was the right thing to do. So I thought that that was a really good episode of the Bitcoin group.
You know, let me make this point. My problem was not so much, like, I would understand what they're doing anyway. That's not the point. I look to you to do that. But, you know, my problem was, is the mechanism, the method by which they did it and forced it and pushed it. This is exactly what I was screaming about, that I was looking for. Where is it that somebody can just, you know, bum rush this thing in? You know, kangaroo court.
Oh, it's not. They wouldn't have been able to do it. It wouldn't have worked even if I hadn't said anything. I mean, would they have actually gone through and forked the chain and caused damage? No, because to do that, they would have needed mining pools to be like, all right, our giant ultra expensive mining pool is going to go over to your fork and destroy the value proposition of our golden egg-laying goose. They were never going to do that. The market is in control of what happens to Bitcoin. The market is a force of nature.
But they didn't see it. Why didn't they see it? They had some kind.
Because he's silly.
Well, I mean,
he's not a free market guy.
Okay, so he just, you know, I'm going to do it, and it's a rule and made in choice and hierarchy of respect my authority, and that's how things get done? I mean, is that his mindset?
Yeah, he thought he was smarter than everybody else, and that, you know, 7 transactions per minute is not enough, and that we need to fork over to XT and increase the block size under...
Well, it better be 7 transactions a second. Are you saying a minute?
I'm sorry, 7 transactions per second.
Okay, yeah, I'm going, damn, man, you need to upgrade that one. Hell, I do that. So, you know, so this whole debate on the block size increase, is that coming back in another form? Is it, you know, going to be addressed? Is it a concern to be worried about? What's up?
Well, here's so when I talked about it on the Bitcoin group, I did so from a standpoint of a information technology project manager in charge of an immutable piece of software that we need to make sure that what we're doing is right before we do anything. So I ripped their plan and said, what we need to do is focus on the singular issue which needs to change, which is block size. We need to come to an agreement on what that block size should be. Should it be a static increase, or should we have like a gear ratio for it going up and down based on use of the network? And then once we agree on that, we can, without scope bloat, implement a singular change to the chain with a control that is not achievable when you have multiple issues being pushed through, which was the case with XT. So,
what were some of the issues that they were trying to lump in with it? Earmarks in their bill?
Well, what they wanted to do was they wanted to fix a security issue wherein if you had a Bitcoin wallet on a computer, you could get 10 different Tor nodes, or however many are enough to max out your wallet's node connections, that are all BS and that all feed your wallet bad information, and then you can eventually have bad stuff happen as a result of that. So their solution for that was they're going to give Tor nodes a weight that's less than the nodes of, you know, regular stuff, so that that wouldn't be able to happen. Is that a good plan? It's a pretty good plan. Can we extrapolate every single possible consequence of that from now until forever in a mutable chain? No. Should we be talking about that right now in the context of how important it is to increase block size? No. Should that scope bloat have been brought to the scope of changes that we're talking about? Absolutely not. And I think that that was universally agreed with.
Okay. Now, this is what I got from that very point right there. When I was talking to some of the other guys, and they're explaining this, and the only thing that I heard was that Tor transactions got less of a priority than other approved or whitelisted or whatever.
Yep, less weight.
Well, I mean, it demonstrated a philosophical leaning, you know? It was like the more secure ones were dinged a little bit, you know? The ones that, you know, it's just, you know, the way that you would even be able to weight transactions that had favorable or unfavorable traits, the fact that you can even do that, the reasons that you would do that, you got to be very careful, or you're just belying, you know, a collectivist mentality.
Oh, absolutely. And it wasn't weighting of transactions. It's weighting of nodes. So it's weighting of the – it's a weight applied to the credibility of somebody that's repeating with a megaphone everything that it's hearing. Yeah, but you're right. As soon as you start to put in code that starts to manage the value of different people's information
exactly.
to a computer network, that slippery slope becomes deadly.
No, it's a mechanism by which you manage everything else based on
yep.
whatever it is you want to manage, you know?
Yep.
It just inserted the collectivist mentality of the gatekeeper of your allowed and, you know, trusted program module crap on Bitcoin. I mean, it's a philosophy. It's not software, hardware. That's not even that's just a manifestation of a philosophy. And the philosophy
yes.
is supposed to be, as what was, you know, promised me from the beginning of all this stuff, is the ability to very inexpensively, you know, almost practically free, you know, be able to use a network that would allow you to transfer value anonymously, or at least, you know, they're not
pseudo-anonymously.
Yeah, you can if you want. And you have this ledger that keeps it forever and the secrets go away and all that. I mean, all these base things. And then every change that these guys come in at Core Dev, it's always a kind of eat at that a little bit for some fictitious made up, you know, oh my God, problem that you could fix other ways that wouldn't violate the promise.
Well, think about it like this. The Core devs are doing rinky-dink stuff. Anything that's really hardcore, they do not have the ability nor the authority to talk about it like they know what they're doing or anything. They make a wallet that's called Core. So it's like the Airbits team coming and being like, we're going to change Bitcoin. It's like just because there's a conflation between the name of your project and the chain does not mean that you are more important than the other wallet developers. And the fact that you're acting like it is very infuriating.
Yeah. So
you get what I mean?
Yeah, no, of course I do, but I'm who else has the authority? I mean, you're saying the community, you know, out trumps them, and you know, Blake
went
on. And
it really is the miners. It's
okay.
Those giant conglomerates that are mining a whole bunch of stuff, and it's like, well, will they ever conspire? Because that's, you know, kind of a centralization.
Why not?
Well, they've spent so much money that they would not be able to change the network, because the network, basically from a computer science perspective, represents perfect system balance. And destroying that perfect system balance for any reason is going to greatly reduce the profit that they get. So, like, the market really is very much so in control with these puppet hands that represent the miners. Those miners are never going to do something that the market is going to say will lose them money.
Well, the market, see, that's when Paul Pway, I had him on not too long ago, and he was talking about, I'm sick of everybody saying, oh, you know, Bitcoin doesn't matter. You know, it's blockchain technology is real innovation, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, no, it's a Bitcoin thing. The value of Bitcoin is very important because that value is what determines the amount of involvement and computing power to it and the hash rate of the yada, yada, yada. That's what gives it value. And if you don't have, you know, Bitcoin worth enough to make it worth doing, you don't have the hash rate, and then you start this death spiral of it doesn't matter anymore, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, the value is like, well, what is value? Value is care.
I pay my electric bill for my freaking miner. That's what the value is.
Well, no, I mean, value is care. It's like, if you take money out of everything, it's like, how much care, like, how much do the humans on this rock care about this network? Well, that number that's tied to each coin is a measure of that, you know?
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. Well, if they care less or they worried more and the value goes down because miners are dicking around with it or something, that's where you're saying that they wouldn't dick around with it too much because then they'd lose all the value.
Well, right now you have all of the idiots that push the bounds of not getting it, trying to create some kind of software as a service middleman model to make money off of Bitcoin without investing in it directly and just waiting for it to go up. These idiots are just flying money around everywhere except for putting it into Bitcoin so the main chain raises in value. And those greedy people are dumb, and a fool and their money are soon parted. And just like the dot-com bubble, all of those dot-com startups that failed loosened up a lot of money from fools that shouldn't have had it. And so this is the second coming of that, but it's kind of embarrassing for the community as well to see so many manic, sycophantic morons being like, I love this project, when it's really like, this is an untenable project run by morons, and it's a scam. I wish that you wouldn't be so, you know, manically, irresponsibly positive on things that aren't good.
You know,
and
I
that's
had this
kind of what I've been working with.
You know, this is a conversation I had. What's his name? Michael Turpin over at BitAngels or something. Is that his name? Michael Turpin.
Yeah, Michael Terrapin. He's a good guy, a friend of mine.
We had a good conversation on this stuff, and he was saying that he'd gone through this. You know, he's an older guy, you know, my age, a little older, and remembers the internet in the 90s. And
he likes real fancy cuisine. I eat dinner with him.
Oh, there you go. Well, he is very, doesn't want to miss the next internet, oh my God, and he recognized it with this. But he told me on air, he said, you know, if you really wanted to invest in Bitcoin and anything around big, just buy Bitcoin. He goes, because there's no startup that's going to give you a percentage increase that just Bitcoin's going to do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And all this money that's being wasted on these people that are like, I came up with an idea. I glued light bulb to a vacuum cleaner and to a toaster and called it utility, which is what 21, in my opinion, basically did.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing we had, Airbits got some venture capital, went their way. You know, Will Pangman and Megan Kellison, you know, head in San Diego. Will stopped by here on his way, said, yo, what's up? And then Megan and Tim Fries drive her to San Diego. They'll come by and we'll have a party. But, you know, I was talking to Paul and I made that comment. He goes, no, that the reason that they invested in Airbits, and it started to dawn on me what they were doing, because of their ability to have account information, all your transactions, your wallet, all that kind of stuff, and not require that they know who you are or an email that you access that account via, you know, all this encryption and so
forth. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, Airbits has utility. That they should have gotten money. I definitely don't mean to include
No. I understand. But I'm just saying that this technology and these companies, it's not just Bitcoin. It's the philosophy that Paul brought to it and how they did it. All of a sudden now, the investment was in that ability of having these accounts and, you know, keep this information and being able to encrypt it, and the man can't get access. Even if they get the server, it's worthless information. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me, I'm going, holy crap, this is going to be like Verizon Virtual Assistant. If I back up everything on my phone, I always, forever and always have the files that I finally don't have to go to Verizon and give them all my contact information of everybody. And then I got a list. And I'm going, for me to secure this, you know, it's much easier for me. I get a different phone, just like I repopulate with my Airbits wallet. I'm going to repopulate all my data on everything. It's like carbonite encrypted and nobody can get it. And I'm going, well, hell yeah, I want to invest in that, you know? So, you know, to marry that with, you know, Bitcoin and the ability to do that. Now they added in a third-party option of you can buy and sell, and then they're going to want an anal probe if you go do that. But, you know, it's...
But to compartmentalize that is good and important,
right,
and I believe
right.
They'll do that.
Which I was, you know, real butthead about, you know? I'm like, come on, man. don't tell me. Say it ain't so, you know? So, no, we kept it compartmentalized. Well, okay. So,
I was in San Francisco, and we went to a talk at Stanford, and then afterwards I had lunch with Paul Pooley, and we talked for a long time, and I basically was able to conclude through our discussion. We talked for a long, long time.
Is it Pooley or Pway? Do you know it's Pooley?
I call him Paul Pooley. I don't know what it is.
Okay,
I've never heard him say it, if I admit it.
Yeah, we need to...
But what we talked, and basically I was able to conclude that Paul wants to develop Bitcoin and expand the circle of trustlessness in a way that is in line with the scope of Satoshi's white paper. To be able to say that about other companies would be very, very, very difficult. You know?
What do you mean other companies? You mean that they would have that philosophy that he has?
Yep, that they would be like, what I want to do is to build on this 2008 white paper that transcended fault tolerance limitations in computer science. I see the value of that. I see the prophetic brilliance that it took to come up with that, and I want to continue to grow that white paper in a direction that is in line with the scope of the systems described therein. That is not the case with other hardware manufacturers like 21 or like BFL, Butterfly Labs. I ordered some stuff from them, and they did not ship it for over a year. I calculated the amount of money that I would have made if they had shipped when they said they were going to versus when they did, and the difference was $300,000.
Well, were they using your computer that they sold you know, to mine until they sent it to you?
Yes, and then they were using some of the Bitcoins that they mined. The COO, Josh Zerlin, went out and bought firearms because they were getting death threats.
Wow. This is...
Not from me.
Yeah. But the you're worse. You just go on Let's Talk Bitcoin and slap them around or something.
I've never been on Let's Talk Bitcoin.
Oh, really? Well, what is the one that you were talking about?
The Bitcoin group. I really like the Bitcoin group. Let's Talk Bitcoin sometimes for me is a little bit too positive. Some people call the Bitcoin group sometimes the hater squad, but like if you don't want to be held to high standards, don't make a Bitcoin.
Well, who are the other participants?
Well, it'll be like me, Andreas Antonopoulos, Chris Ellis, Thomas Hunt, Davi Barker, Megan Lords, Will Pangman, Derek Freeman, Tone Vase. Really, 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 really sharp group of people.
Wow. Yeah, we had like all those guys on.
Well, that's 'cause you know what's going on.
Andreas has kind of dropped off the radar screen. What's up with him?
Well, he's been working diligently at blockchain, and I believe Christoph is working over there as well.
Doing what? I mean, they're finally going to try and resurrect the brand or something, or what?
Oh, exactly what they're doing, I guess. I don't even know myself.
Yeah, I'm just, once I finally got what, something that made, plus, knowing Paul Pouet, or Pouet, or how you say it,
Paul Poopy.
Yeah. we'll get him to help us out with it. The one thing that I was looking for was someone like him with a product like him. When it came available, and he talked, it was Davi and Drew that over at Bitcoin Up Bombs that, said, Ernie, man, you gotta meet this guy. So I spent a few days with him in Libertopia a couple of years ago, and we were just like, I grilled the living snot out of him, and he was very patient with me, which is why he likes Will Pangman. Will Pangman's an enthusiast that's, patient and will spend the time to help. And matter of fact, it was Pangman spending like 5 hours with Richard Grove at Tragedy and Hope on that video that they did. On how to do two-factor authentication and make sure, because I didn't want Richard Grove to get into a Bitcoin use and have a bad experience, because he was.
Oh, I know. I was actually on the show the day before, and you asked me if I could do it, and I said, I'm really, 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 really busy, but
Will Pangman is the best
possible person I can think of to do it, and I love Richard Grove's work with Tragedy and Hope. That YouTube channel is absolutely flipping amazing. And then I basically begged Will to do it. Not that I had to, but I was like, Will, please help me out. And he's like, who's Richard Grove and blah, blah, blah. And then,
that's right. I remember now. I forgot all about that. Thank you. the thing is that it was Paul Pouet took that interview, that presentation that they did together, that it got edited down to 2 or 3 hours from 5 or something, But it was the adjust button being explained. That's what it was. But so when he went through that, Paul took point by point on that, and he said, this two-factor, they made it default and automatic into Airbits's thing, from that conversation. I'm sure he can do what he wants, but, it helped cleared up, just how difficult this was, what Will was doing. And he goes, well, hell, can we do that in the software? I mean, seriously. So they did. And then, of course, having Will come over was a good choice for a lot of reasons. So I'm just going, this is the user interface and the grandma adjust button mentality is where I think this needs to go, not just on Bitcoin and its use in wallets and all that, but on privacy and technology, being able to communicate off the grid of they don't get to see and none their business. And I'm going, is that a market? Well, coming out Christmas Day is Snowden the Movie by Oliver Stone. So I'm going, it's sure as hell going to be then. So when this happens, then it's going to be the Oscars are coming out in March and everything. So I'm thinking by the beginning of the second quarter of 2016, we're going to be hot into the presidential race. Carla Fiorina and her freaking central plan for everything, technologically. And Snowden's movie being out. And hopefully there's a demand for this kind of hardware, software abilities that I'm wondering where it's going to get filled. Are there any people on the horizon other than Think Penguin that, a hardware or a new quantum, watch that bypasses everything? I mean, what?
I mean, it's a good question. There's a company called Investors Angel. They advise angel investors and what to buy, and they just brought me on as an expert to help them. And I've already looked through a couple companies, and I was just super bearish, like, this is never going to work, this is not a good idea for these reasons and things like that. And hopefully, you know, once people realize that I don't ever like any company and that I'm really, really hard to please, and then I say, hey, Airbits, good company, or this other company that actually is going to do something that's going to help, and their, you know, business model is to race to the bottom of decentralization. Because if you are making a software as a service model and trying to make lots of money with your service relative to Bitcoin, somebody's going to fork it and make it free, and you've just fucked it big time. I mean, you have totally gone into a black hole of not getting it, and all the effort that you put in got forked away. And I think that those types of things will continually help bring the quantum watch or whatever the super technology you're hoping for might be.
Well, I'm not. It's a lot of times it's a tally stick. I took this piece of wood and I split it, and now there's a debt of you, and then it cancels when you go and it matches. I mean, there was even a friend of mine before Bitcoin. They had a web page called they used a currency called Tally Stick. And it was, under this concept. You know what a tally stick is? You ever heard of that?
I've heard the term, and I've even had somebody talk to me about it a little bit. But I think
it's very simple. It's like if you wanted to have, you have public and private encryption. Well, how they did that, to have, a deal that was done, you'd write it on the, plank or stick or whatever, and you just split it. So you have two pieces. Well, these two pieces of wood would only go together, if from the original two pieces of wood. You couldn't, get another wood and it exactly match and it, fuse together when you put them together. So they call it a tally stick. It was how you had the two together. If you were the bearer of this one and he had that one, well, you came in with that stick. It was like a bearer bond or something, okay? So you start going low tech on something like that. You start going back to freaking... the unforgeable of I did whatever videotape of I said or something. I mean, that kind of simplicity can be brought technologically. Well, it was kind of the promise of Bitcoin. So I was thinking tally sticks. We were already talking about this, heck, just a year or two before that. It was during the Levolution, and they were doing all kinds of stuff, creating web pages and thinking about this into the future. Well, it was already coming, and Bitcoin kind of took that. And that was during when we were pushing silver, too. So I'm going, okay, is Bitcoin it? In your opinion, is there something else that'll supplant it, be better than it? And you're going, nah, Bitcoin's probably going to be it.
I mean, I've tried at great length to improve upon what Satoshi made with the distribution schedule and the halvings and the 21 million and stuff. And a lot of people have. There's tons of altcoins. Every single change represents negative progress. And with that kind of realization, it's very, very, very clear that Bitcoin is going to adapt as the networks of miners that have put their effort into it continue to fork over to more valuable things that are not fundamental changes, but that, allow more use of the system without bloating it out and things like that. Satoshi couldn't program that, in my opinion, because imagine trying to set the gear ratios for a race that's never been raced before.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to do that. You'd be like, let's try to pick an all-purpose gear, and then once it's been run a few times, then we can customize it. Because if we do it wrong, it's not going to be good.
Well, this customization of the code, I mean, the benefit of Bitcoin, what it did, it comes right after 2008, the big crash. Yep. They see, oh, hell, here we can do it better. Here you go, do this. People did it. It worked. It keeps progressing. And I'm going, okay, but a lot of these other companies like Coinbase, Circle, and BitPay and all this kind of stuff, they're having to do the know your customer thing, compliant. Well, we can make a bunch of money if we did this and interface with the bank of Goldman Sachs wants to be our customer or something. And they do that. But to make it work better, we need to alter and change, and we put in a request to alter Bitcoin in this way to make us more money for the proprietary, we get, rich. And I'm going, yeah, I can see a lot of that pressure coming from them, but that is separate from where it's really done is the miners. But I can see the United States, you know, making legislation. If they can't change Bitcoin, it seems like they're trying to create their own alternative GovCoin or some crap, or SucksCoin or something. And they're going into the blockchain technology. But then you get into this hash rate thing. You know, how secure, how much money does it take to hack it? And so I'm looking at all these things, and I half understand what you guys are saying, but I'm hoping that this type of mentality goes in to all data, not just Bitcoin or blockchain. And I'm looking for the communication of just ones and zeros that are representative of characters of an email or a video or an audio or something that I can transmit and have the security, you know, that Bitcoin has in the hardware and software to do that. Is that on the horizon? Is anybody talking about it?
Well, there's a company called Blockstream, and they want to put hooks into Bitcoin so that they can make side chains so that they can use the decentralization and stability of Bitcoin. But a lot of people see that as like tackling a bull down, restraining it, and then stapling a giant weighted cart to its nuts and then expecting it to behave normally afterwards.
Oh, so a lot of these, that was another thing. What you just said, there was a, I was talking to Patrick Byrne. As a matter of fact, he was supposed to come on last week, but he had to postpone because of whatever he's got. When did Patrick say he's coming on, Donna? 10th of October. So the 10th of October, which the 11th of October is 10 years for Freedom's Phoenix. That'd be a good time for him to come on, celebrate 10-year anniversary.
I would love to be on at the same time as him sometime.
We've, yeah, well, we'll try and work out some
behind closed doors, but never.
October 6th. October 6th, she said. Well, yeah, we'll see if we could. We'll see what we can do. You know, it's you know, it's tough enough just to get him. You know, that get him on a regular basis is like amazing. He's really nice to us. But when I heard when he did T0, that T0, I'm going, what did he get a whole bunch of big giant servers? And when you're starting, you want to deal with securing financial transactions to the tune of gazillions of dollars in stocks and so on. I mean, man, somebody's ponying up some money for some servers or something. And they go, somebody said that they were linking it like what you're talking about to some kind of link into the blockchain for Bitcoin. Do you know anything?
Sorry about that. Some guy was talking at me. He's like, what's your Dropbox email? And I was like, Dropbox email. Uh-huh. Don't send me anything important through Dropbox.
Right. Well, this is exactly my point. You know, where you have like storage or made safe or something, you want to have Dropbox, but you want it to where it's not like, you know, you're just serving it up into your file, the permanent record of NSA, whatever, you know. And but they're doing the T0 thing with the stocks and so on being.
And the pre-borrowed tokens and all that.
Well,
they got
see,
that idea.
Is that linked to the Bitcoin blockchain at all or not?
No, I mean, it's basically like Patrick Byrne isn't trying to do what other people do as far as let's try to separate blockchain technology from Bitcoin and then bring it into a limited use case in a SaaS model for a business and then charge an arm and a leg and then they'll wonder why it works like shit. Patrick is not wanting to do that. What Patrick wants to do is actually fix the settlement process and the stock trading process so that it cannot be as highly captured and crappy as it is. So if you have pre-borrowed assured tokens in a different network on which to settle, that solves a huge problem. Does it have to do with Bitcoin? It's informed by the philosophy of Bitcoin and by the amount of philosophy that Patrick Byrne has studied.
Okay, so it's not linked in some way that there's some kind of something.
As far as I'm aware, yeah, there's
okay.
No...
Somebody had said that, and I'm going, okay, well, that kind of, you know, saves a lot. So the way he's doing it, he's not going to need big, giant, oh, my God, servers or what?
Or well, I mean, he can have, like, there's ways to do stuff like that. Like, physical access is the biggest threat to IT security in all situations. So you can have, like, rotating federated servers at different locations or something like that. And he and his tech people are smart enough to be able to know to do that. I think it was just the other day there was a huge an ocean of data that went down on servers, and it brought down, like, Reddit and Netflix and Facebook and a whole bunch of stuff. Like, he's not going to go pay for cheap space in a data space like that. Like, he'll have his own brick shithouse systems.
All right. Well, I'm, you know, because you know they're going to be a target if somebody wants some, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Patrick has been a target himself personally and his business and his projects for so long that he's like, I understand how important security is. I mean, I got a picture with him in a carport outside of a hotel in D.C. And when he was pulling off, there was, you know, the armored car in front and in back of his car and stuff. People sitting on both sides. I was like, holy crap.
Really? That were following him or part of his security team?
They were part of his security team, I believe. There was a car in front and behind his car.
Yeah, he was talking about wanting to go to Jackalope, man. There ain't going to be any security except for a bunch of armed campers. But, I mean, you know,
exactly.
It might be better.
Like, that's the most secure place that you could possibly go. They'd be like, I believe that Mr. Byrne wants to be left alone.
Right. Well, he didn't, you know, bring a big entourage when he came and spoke at the Freedom Summit. So, you know, that was cool.
I think being in D.C. was made almost everybody kind of uncomfortable, especially because it was an anarcho conference labeled as such. And I think maybe that had a piece to do with it, too. I don't know.
Hmm. So you're still optimistic, pessimistic, and what your pessimism I'm getting is that just, you know, there's all this media buzz about certain tech and things that really for real can do. And some, you know, fast talkers are coming in and taking advantage of people that should know better, don't know better, don't have the capacity to know better. And that's why they're starting to hire you just so they know better.
Oh, I mean, I don't know if people are starting to hire me, but people are starting to see that the companies that I criticize generally end up not doing well, and the companies that I praise generally have a philosophy that will, you know, stay between the red and black.
Well, what do you mean by that? The red and black?
Well, I mean, they actually are able to get through their valley of death and start to pay back funding and start to actually have a value proposition that makes it so that they continue to get seed rounds and stuff like that. Like,
okay, but you're seeing that it's based on a philosophy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's based on a philosophy of, are you actually going to provide a service to your consumers? Are you going to treat them like dumb cows that you can manipulate and abuse to try to steal money from? And people think that people are dumb and that they can be manipulated, but people in their collective form make up the market, which is a force of nature, and the market is not stupid, and you can't hoodwink the market. Maybe you can for a little bit. Maybe you can rob a bank and have a lot of money for a few minutes, but it's not going to last.
Well, that's good to know. I kind of what I'm counting on. You know, here the one thing that I'm starting to realize as we start to look for a place. You know, I'm 54. It's time to, you know, I got probably at least, you know, I feel pretty good. I'm in good health. I can 10 years of experience and some back break and a couple of acre. I can build a whatever and look. Okay, where are we going to go and still be in Arizona, grandkids, you know, and kids and everything. And as I look around and so I can see that there's such a tie to ties. I mean, like, if you're on a physical piece of property and you're got some kind of, you're pissing off the man or they're, you're not taking it quietly while they rape you in the backfield or something. I mean, you know, then they come after you. And I just see so many examples of it. And a lot of it's just financial. And they're any and every, how they... A good example, we were camping, one of the guys up there, you know, he's got some money. The boy's got $200,000 rig of his three-axle, you know, fifth wheel and the big freaking truck to pull it, you know. And they're out there, and when things went to crap in 2011 here in the valley, he bought 9 acres that was not incorporated, you know, in Northwest Valley here. He goes, cool, I got it. It's got a well, it's got this, it's got that, it's got access. Okay, I'll go build something on there later. I go back. All of a sudden, it got angst by one of the small communities here, and they said, if you want to do this 700 feet of frontage you have, we have to go 60 feet back. If you want a building permit for anything, you're giving all that to us for the highway of road of something of you're not allowed. And then you got to meet all this criteria that he didn't before when he bought it. And he's
but
like,
it's for the greater good, Ernie. It's for the greater good.
It's a philosophy that you're up against. It's, you know, that's the point that I was making. I'm going, you know, I went to the League of Cities and Towns a month and a half in Tucson at a convention with all 90 communities in Arizona are finally on this list. And it just started, you know, I remember them going heavy in the mid-90s after the Kyoto, you know, UN Agenda 20, we rule you crap, you know? And it was a philosophy, and they looked for the mechanism by which they could, you know, promote this philosophy in law and legislation and everything. And I've seen it march. I saw it happen. So what he did is when he got that, he's like, what the heck? I go, you were up against a philosophy. You didn't know it. That's what we libertarians have been out here screaming. You know, if you advocate for this, it is going to be this rope you're building that's going to lynch you, you know?
Yeah, we're all saying, I don't mess with you, you don't mess with me. And then other people are saying, no, I don't agree to that. Why doesn't that piss everybody off as much as it does us?
Well, I think it's getting to where, you know, if they understand it, because, of course, the propaganda is that, you know, Durka Durka Jihad and terrorist and 9/11. And you look at the presidential debates and it's almost comical. I you know, it's like during 08, Giuliani must have got $100,000 every time he said Islamo-fascism. I mean, you know, it's just so now it's terrorist and ISIS and we got to go more ships and boats and planes and kill people. And I'm going, there is, man, is there any lesson learned here? What is the, so I'm thinking that as time goes on, it's getting to where that can't continue doesn't. And it's just getting to that point. No one, even the people with resources, another story is a guy that had a business. He makes hoses for deep oil wells, you know, hoses for the oil industry. They have to be super duper, 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 you know. And because the highway that they're building around the valley, there is the outer loop, you know, it's 101, and the outer loop, the 303. As they're building this, and they're getting ready to start connecting to the other highway, so then they'll expand to the desert out there. Gee, how did the desert get all expanded on? Because they built a highway. So as they're going where they're originally going to go, they don't, because it had federal housing. So it had subsidized low-income housing that got their Section 8 or whatever. Because the federal government had a dime into this, they go, nope, it's our policy, and you can't go through here or eminent domain or get these people money or whatever, and you're not. So you have to go over here. Not that I'm for, you know, eminent domain and everybody, but, you know, so they go, all right, we won't go there.
Eminent domain when it's the government fighting itself.
Yeah. So then they go to another place where they go through this factory, and because he has, you know, site permits, he has to be there, and he can't have... The bottom line is, they're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars more because they have to duplicate his business and build it and give him all new stuff and everything, so that when he turns his light switch off here, a nano moment later, it goes on over here, and they're in production. So this is... I look at this, and so he's kind of pissed off about his 9 acres, but he's not so pissed. You know, he's like, oh, it kind of worked out this way. So I'm going... This philosophy that we're up against of just stupidity, and I look at, I give you another great example. The highway system here in downtown Phoenix, you're going on the highway, and it doesn't, you know, exit to the right and just kind of go in to merge to another highway. It exits to the left, goes around, and a bridge over or under whatever where you were going. Way more expensive to do that. I go,
oh yeah,
why the hell did they do that? What moron came up? And I made a big deal out on the radio. I'm going, somebody's got to explain this to me. That is the stupidest thing I ever saw. The reason was is that the federal government doesn't subsidize. No, because they have a policy that they don't subsidize off ramps. If it went off to the right, it was considered an off ramp. If it went to the left and then back over and it's convoluted, it's some kind of like an exchange or internet exchange. So then they could do it.
Bending the definition of an off on ramp, and that's why they did it.
Yeah, that's why they did it. Is because they were just, you know, it was qualified them for more, you know, to get it paid for. Even though it costs more to do and everything. It's just, so I'm going, years of this, of seeing this wasted stupidity.
Think about all these mail signals. Think about all these mail signals. Like, that's a construction mail signal. There's value mail signals. There's mail signals even all the way down to the fundamental layers of solidarity. People hate each other in the zero-sum game of socialist nonsense because they're like, they're going to get some of my benefits package, and there's only so much in the zero-sum game of collectivism. And really, the logical conclusion of altruistic collectivism to a, you know, a crazy endpoint is, if you really want to help the greater good and you're a collectivist and you believe in all that stuff, you take yourself out because there's only limited resources, and you really, you know, helping other people and the greater good is absolutely more important than individuals. That leads to suicide. That seems like a pretty...
Save the planet, shoot yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a pretty disgusting philosophy to have that be the logical conclusion.
Well, I'm glad that, I mean, you still haven't really gave me a clear vision of, you see enough technology, hardware, and software out there that you're feeling you know, that there's something right on the horizon. I mean, I always have faith in the market. It's going to happen. We're going to be fine. I'm not that worried. But, you know, that was the one thing everybody think, oh, doom and gloom. I go, not really. I mean, I'm, you know, this is why doom and gloom, a lot of people are going to be toast. But, you know, the generation next, anybody that really has some real skills and knows what's going on and aren't, you know, just Walmart and welfare, you know, spender, McDonald eating, whatever the hell. I mean, you know, then I go, you're going to be okay. It's going to be a big, giant, humongous purging of this dead weight that has been subsidized by everybody. You know, from those according to their ability to all those according to I needy.
According to I need for the greater good now.
Yeah. You know, we used to do in the mid-90s, we would go to the Arizona State Fairgrounds. And, of course, they want you to buy a booth inside and everything. And we're libertarians. We're being crazy. So what happened was is that you could go and you bought a ticket for the parking space. Well, we would go and buy multiple tickets for the parking space and get there early in the morning to be near the entrance. So it's acres and acres and thousands of cars, people going to the state fair. We would set up our little, you know, libertarian gypsy booth, and, you know, everybody had to go by us, and we're barking at them and handing out stuff and, you know, and freedom and all that kind of thing. And one year we did this a couple of years. We had this little stage. It was a 4x4 stage platform out of extra wood we had or something painted. And we had this little, you know, big soapbox. It's probably a 4 foot off the ground. And that was a skit that we did. I'd go up. I go, but I need to the state chair, a guy named Rick Tompkins that later ran for president against Harry Brown for the nomination in 96. And I go, we did this whole skit, but I got this and I got that. And then he would counter. And it was like, you know, this argument. And all of a sudden, all these people would gather around. You'd get 70 people sitting there listening to this argument, you know, but I need, what about this? And what about that? You know, and then it go, you know, okay, freedom's the answer. What's the question thing? I can see that happening with the internet, the way it is now in the youth, is that the people out there screaming, but I need, has been replaced, but I'm afraid. And they're going to do whatever the hell they got to do, they, them, those, to make us afraid. I mean, thermonuclear mushroom cloud of, you know, St. Louis Arch, Golden Gate Bridge, Yosemite thermo something. I mean, you know.
There was somebody that was talking about, like, the Muslims are going to get a nuke into New York. And then they showed a clip, and it wasn't like a crappy nuclear bomb. It was like a fully developed, like, American, like, ultra high, like, fusion bomb that, like, wiped out the entire, like, coast. It's like, no, nobody has access to that except for our government. This is stupid.
Well, even if they did, they by, you know, because they want, you know, last night, I didn't even finish it. I just had, you know, it was on Netflix or something. You know, it was free. And I go, okay, Sum of All Fears. Tom Clancy, it was Ben Affleck, and Morgan Freeman, you know, and that's all the sum of all fears. The fear, oh, it was 1973, an Israeli, you know, fighter jet during Syria when they went after it, and the kind of, and they crashed, and there's a nuclear bomb found in the desert, and they got it. Now what are you gonna do? You know, it's just, it's one of those, they just, you know, will do all this mental gymnastics to create a situation that, well, you need us now, you know, and all the problems that we have been generated from the U.S. being dicks. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Blowback.
Right, exactly. So I'm just, the blowback in technology, the blowback in surveillance, the blowback, it's coming back. You know, all of a sudden they did not see, you know, this coming. You know, Snowden is what, about your age? He's like Blake Anderson was sitting there and saw it and go, you know what? I already know where this goes, and we're going to blow the whistle. And boom. When he did, and then the movie comes out, and people are going to, you know, make a big deal out of this, and there's going to be a lot of people that benefit from, you know, blockchain technology, Bitcoin in particular, the surveillance web, meshing of a CubeSat of Elon Musk puts up his 4,000 of you don't even get us on ones and zeros on your DARPA DOD grid anyway. You know, the internet.
Yeah, those batteries are awesome. And people don't understand the significance of the, third parties that sell your information, not knowing how much power you're using. That is extremely important. I mean, there's some people that I knew that were running, little Bitcoin mining farms with extra equipment early on that had the government come in and kick in their doors looking for a grow operation because their power use spiked. Yeah. And it's like, what country is this?
America! With a K.
America.
You know, there was a series, I don't know if you even know about it, it was in the late 70s, early 80s, called America with a K-A at the end, and it starred Kris Kristofferson, and it was a mini-series, kind of like Roots or something, and it was how America would have been, you know, is taken over by this philosophy. See, and that was the point they were making. It's like Russia, you know, took over our government and took over our local schoolhouse and took over a censorship and it took over. And it wasn't like Russia did it. A philosophy did it. And that was what this whole movie was about. And I should watch it again. I mean, I remember it was, they definitely kind of scrubbed the internet of this thing. They was like, oh, hell no, you know, and it was a big thing at
brought
the time.
Brought to you by America, spelled with a K.
America. You know, there was, at the time, it was also when Red Dawn happened. You know, when they had the Soviets come parachute in middle America and so on. That was during the, you know, Ronald Reagan thing. Yeah, I went through this. And when you started getting the promise, because they were talking, you had the Charlie Chaplin IBM guy going around, and you have PCs and Macs and all this other stuff. And it was just before you actually got it and you saw, you know, how limited it really was. I mean, it did a lot of stuff. And then my first computer was a Tandy Model 4 TRS-80, you know, with a big giant bread box size extra 5 mega RAM. I mean, 5 mega storage. So I'm just going, this is, I mean, when the floppy disks were actually floppy. So
I remember that.
So I go through this time, and I could see it was the promise of Star Trek, of just talking to the computer. I mean, everything that we were looking and hoping that we get, except they're just now finally coming on with some flying cars about damn time. But, you know, everything that we were imagining as kids is now starting to come to pass. But with the dystopian twist of it, all feeds into they, them, those. And I'm going, there has to be someone like you guys and others that see this market. And I'm wondering, and that was why I wanted to show there was a market for this kind of computing with the support of MadeSafe. And they did really well, you know, started off and kind of, hey, man, you know, there's like a market for this. You know, there's a market for Airbits. There's a market for Bitcoin. There's a market, you know, for the absence of surveillance, of private computing. So that's why I really want you to keep me informed on that. There's going to be some board making quantum photon reading doing, you know, watch plug in keyboarded.
All right. I'll spill the beans. What we have is something called BitSim. It's a thin card that goes onto your SIM card that emulates and virtualizes a hardware layer communication system in a much more efficient way than the 21 computer does. And it's backwards compatible all the way back to the legacy banking system with AML and KYC on the top layer, and then other layers beneath that that you can go back onto to obfuscate your financial dealings. That's the project that I'm working on right now.
Okay, BitSim, this is software or hardware?
The BitSim is software and hardware.
So it is, you know, what it's part of a SD card or your SIM card or a, you know,
it's like a sticker that you put onto your SIM card.
A sticker that goes onto a regular SIM card.
Yep.
A sticker.
Well, it's not really a sticker. There's circuitry inside of
no,
it.
No, I understand, but I mean, it's that thin and that small and that. And how the hell does it interface? Does it go onto the contacts? It makes contact with the actual.
It allows you to do SIM to SIM hardware level exchange. I have to go. My son is starting to cry, but we should talk more about this. I don't really have.
No. The fact that I finally, after a couple of hours, I get you to even say BitSim. You know, freaking. You know, oh, you had me hanging all this time. You're gonna leave me with it, and then you got kids. You know, doing the bell for you. Okay, I get it. All right, BitSim. Now you got me. Thank you. Freaking. I knew it was damn. Shit. You know, I'm sitting here floundering. You know, wondering the fate of humanity is, and you're sitting there on the solution and you're just being a butthead. All right.
But the solution just is just forming, and so we both don't want an asshole to get it, nor do we want
I need to cut this in the archive and take this out?
No, it'll be fine.
All right. So BitSim. Okay. Finally, freaking see? I hook everybody up. You know, Blake Anderson said, yeah, exactly what I'm, where's the just button of kind of, well, we kind of got it. It's a postage stamp you put on your SIM card. Okay. Well, shit. You know, you should have said that. All right. Hey, thanks.
But you know what I mean? Like, if 21 had gotten $115 million to come up with something like that, people would be like, holy shit, cool. Versus, they came up with some kind of computer scrap parts glued together that anybody could have done that. So, I mean, that's part
well,
of the nature.
Well, no, I mean, see, you're not going to get it. See, a lot of times these VCs go in based on, you know, there's some philosophy that's being supported or a connection or somebody. It has nothing to do with what the promise is or the real. It's just weird shit. You know, you can't. Yeah. Base it. It's why I really
cronyism, all kinds of excuses that are not market driven, which is bizarre. But since we don't have a real market, and those people may or may not have money from things that are like family or like didn't earn. I mean, the whole thing is really, really weird. And
well, it's because they get some government contract, or one doesn't work because they prevented from getting any contracts, or they sick their media dogs on them, or you're terrorists because we can't surveil everything, or whatever the hell. So I'm just going, well, I'm glad you're working. Thank you, God, man. I'm just. You know, seriously, you made me suffer all through that.
Well, because I still want to do the arbitrage bank, but I can't do that without other technologies coming first. So then I have to dig deeper into the stack and then start projects that enable the other projects that I have planned. So
that's becoming
a big task.
Yeah, it goes down to the base. Hey, thanks for spending this extra time and leaving me on a better note, man. God, don't do that to me.
You know, no worries at all, man. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more. We'll stay in touch, man. Everything all okay right. with you? You doing all right?
Yeah, everything's okay for right now. I mean, I'm hoping to get a contract signed with somebody sometime this week, and then we'll get some money flowing in. Other than that, it's ramen noodles all the way, but that's the price for changing the future, right?
Hey, I'm hip. I want to help. Hey, thanks for spending time with me, Blake.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon.
Peace.